I'd like to open the House Committee on Human Services and Housing on Wednesday, February 5th, 2014. And we will open up the public hearing and I open up the work session sometime. And work session on House Bill 4038, carried over from the 3rd of February. So Representative Nathanson, is she here? Oh, there she is. Good. And Representative Wisnett, thank you so much. I know how hard you've been working on this.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from House District 13, and Representative Wisnett is with me again this afternoon. I'm going to say just a few words, and my colleague will say just a few more. After we met with your committee and provided information to you, we indicated that we would go back and do a little more work. We brought the stakeholders together that very evening, spent over an hour, and made additional accommodations to meet additional concerns. Several were to clarify wording. One is quite a substantive accommodation to the owners of the parks, and we're very pleased that we were able to get those accommodations and changes made and turned around very quickly. We believe we have a very good product. When Representative Wisnett and I were talking earlier this morning, there was an observation that no one is 100% happy. I'm not happy about this. You're not happy about that. But what I can tell you is overall, I'm very happy because I think we've done something good for Oregonians and something important, and we have also met our commitment to you to work with all the parties and reach a compromise negotiated agreement. Thank you.
Great. And I kept you out of this loop here. You were supposed to tell us what it was about, right? I'm sorry for the rest of the audience who probably has no idea what we're talking about.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill was previously summarized at a hearing, public hearing on Monday, and the parties are returning on the carryover. There is a new amendment, a DAS 3 amendment. I apologize to the committee. The items that were received today, I haven't had time to summarize, so the parties will have to speak to that. And that is, as I understand it, the compromise amendment, the DAS 3 amendment.
Right. Great.
Madam Chair and committee members, good afternoon. Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. I concur with what Representative Nathanson said. We did work hard Monday afternoon after the chair agreed to let us have more time to do one more chance at it. I think we made some good strides, again, trying to address the issues of the owners and the tenants. And I think Mr. Van Lanningham is going to speak. He has a lot more information. I'd like him to speak, especially we agreed that instead of trying to override it in the bill, he's going to put on the record some intent of legislative intent on what certain words meant. And I think that's important, so we do have that on the record so if people go back and start arguing about what was the legislative intent, we'll have that on the record. As Representative Nathanson said, I wish we could have had all agreement. I would like to read a note from Mr. Griff, who was an attorney for the Oregon Park Owners Association, and he worked hard with us that evening trying to find compromise, but he sent us an email saying that without further amendments that he had submitted, his organization still could not support the bill. He has other things he would like to do, but we got three out of four of the main player stakeholders in agreement. And as Representative Nathanson said, I think it's a better bill than it was on record, and I think it was a better bill than this committee heard last session. So we together would like to recommend the committee approve House Bill 4038-3, which has the two major things and two small things that we put in the bill Monday night, agreed to do. That's in the dash three. And also, our legislative council is working hard in long hours, and Harrison Connolly was our LC member on that, and he worked hard with us that night and gave us the draft the next morning of the bill. So appreciate that.
Great. Good. Thank you so much.
Any questions?
Yes.
I just want to thank both of you so much for bringing this together kind of year after year and getting to this point, and to the LC and to the players who did contribute to getting to a win-win on this. This is a lot of hard work and a lot of give on a lot of different parties' parts. Really want to thank you both.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Representative Gilliam?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, for recognizing me. I hope you will use your authority to, we need a work group, we need to study this, and we need more meetings.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
You're
volunteering. No, I learned my lesson. Let's move the bill.
That's what we intend to do. So we have three people signed up to speak, and what we're hoping to hear is about the amendment. We've heard the bill many, many times. We've heard from the speakers who have investments in this, so we'd just like to hear the amendment, and then we don't have all of the paperwork yet, but we intend to pass this bill by 4:45 today. So thank you. John Landingham, Ben Landingham, Chuck Carpenter, and Charlie Grief. Am I pronouncing that, Charlie?
Grief,
thank you. Grief, I'm sorry. And just identify yourself, please.
Hello, I'm Chuck Carpenter, Executive Director of Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. I think I'll defer to these other two gentlemen for their comments. Just like to reiterate that Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon supports the Dash 3 amendments, and we're happy that you're going to move the bill today.
Great. And Chuck, can you just remind us how many park owners you're representing, and about how many spaces are you representing?
I would represent about 489 communities in the state of Oregon, and that's about close to 30,000 spaces.
30,000.
And in addition to that, we have about 25 associate members who are attorneys, management companies, vendors to the manufactured housing community industry. And
great.
We do about 5 seminars a year, and we have an annual conference in Eugene, 2-day conference in Eugene every year.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. John.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Van Landingham. I work as a legal aid lawyer in Eugene in Lane County. And I obviously am here to support the bill. Could I ask, Cheyenne, do you know whether the things I emailed you last night are on OLIS?
For they are, Mr. Van Landingham, both documents.
Thank you. So I'm going to refer to 2 documents that I've given you that are on OLIS. And one is my amended detailed summary of the bill. Knowing that you've all studied it very carefully, the point of that reference is that I've highlighted on that handout the changes that are substantive that are reflected in the Dash 3. So I think my first responsibility here, and working with Representative Wisnett, is to explain to you what's different from what we talked about on Monday and what you have before you today in Dash 3. There were a number, about 6 small changes, things like removing commas, adding the word legal in front of capacity, legal capacity to do something, that we discussed on Monday night and that Legislative Council implemented for us. I don't consider those substantive changes. Those are sort of wordsmithing that make things hopefully work better in the future. But there are 2 substantive changes that were raised by Mr. Graff's group that we did agree on Monday night. One of them I would say I agreed to unhappily, but that's the point of compromise, to give things up and in order to move forward. So those 2 changes both have to do with the confidentiality agreement. You will remember that the way this process is designed to work here is comparable to private market transactions in which the landlord gives, the owner, park owner gives notice to the residents. The residents have 10 days to decide whether they want to try to compete to buy the park. If they do, they have to give written notice back to the owner saying that they do. That during that period, they can ask for financial information. We've specified what financial information they can ask for. It's tended to be what's called a broker's package, what a seller of a park typically would give to a buyer so the buyer can evaluate the sale. One of the things the bill does that's very important to landlords, that addresses a concern the landlords have had during the 5 years that Chuck and I and others have negotiated this, crazy issue, has to do with confidentiality of that financial information. They have some legitimate concerns that an abusive tenant could abuse them with that financial information. So the bill goes to considerable lengths to specify that the landlord can make that information confidential, can make them sign something called a confidentiality agreement, can limit who can see that information, require them to give it back to them, prevent them from making copies, blah, blah, blah. But there were two things that Mr. Greff's group pointed out. One of them I agreed with last week to strengthen that ability of a landlord to make it confidential. The first is to make clear that if the tenants violate the confidentiality agreement, deals off. Landlord has no further obligation to do anything. That's also one of the other main values of the bill, is to say that if tenants don't meet the deadlines, if they don't comply with the purchase and sale agreement, the deal's off. Landlord has no further obligation to do anything. So it was a good change to clarify that violating the confidentiality agreement also would be a basis for the landlord to say the deal's off. The second change, the one that I wasn't too happy to give up, was to say that there's a remedy for a tenant who violates that confidentiality agreement in a substantial way. The landlord would be entitled to recover from the tenant actual damages that the landlord could prove. Previously, I've argued that the ability of the landlord to just say, that's it, no, the deal's off, we're off the table, is the biggest club an owner has for tenant compliance. But the argument was that that's not equivalent to the tenant remedy, and so there should be, each side should have some remedy. So we've agreed to that. Those are the two substantial changes, really, in between the dash one and the dash three. Any questions about that before I go on? So, talking fast, Representative Wisner also asked me to address a couple of things that we discussed on Monday night, where I said, I don't think we need to change the bill for those things, and here's why. And I'm going to try to avoid being too wonky lawyerly here. But the first has to do, if you've got the bill in front of you, with on page one of the bill, line 13 in section one, the main thing that the tenants actually get out of this agreement is that landlords have to give the tenants, all the tenants, a notice saying the landlord's interested in selling or is considering an offer to buy from somebody else. That is not clear in the current law. Current law is actually kind of confusing about that provision, that idea, although it does talk about a notice. So here the phrase says that the landlord has to give, the owner shall give the notice required by the first section to all tenants of the park. And Representative Wisnett and some others have raised the concern that what if the landlord doesn't know who all the tenants are? Or what if the landlord can't find all the tenants? What if there is an absentee owner who owns the manufactured home and rents it out to somebody else? What if the tenant is a snowbird in Arizona? My response is we don't need to change that language, mainly because Oregon law already addresses how, for all tenants and landlords and all residential tenancies, and these are residential tenancies, identifies how a landlord gives notice. The landlord's duty in every case, and there are dozens of statutes in Chapter 90 that talk about landlord shall give notice, tenant shall give notice. We define what it means to give notice, and it is simply to deliver the notice, not to ensure that the tenant gets the notice. There's no obligation on a landlord to prove that the tenant ever got the notice. It is simply to either deliver it in person, one, mail it to the tenant at the last known address, which in this case is obviously going to be the manufactured home in the park, or what's called nail and mail, in which if you don't want to mail it, you can both, I mean, if you mail it, you have to add 3 days. But if you don't want to add 3 days, you can simply attach a copy to the front door of the manufactured home and mail a copy by first class mail. You're done. Whether the tenant ever gets it, doesn't matter. It's not a legal defense for the tenant to say, I didn't get the notice. Landlord's duty is only to mail it. Secondly, I would point out that landlords generally, in my experience, don't have trouble finding tenants for notices like with rent increases. So I don't think it's going to be an issue in terms of finding tenants to give that notice. And finally, we actually talked about this in the work group. And the draft, the November 19th, mostly agreed upon a proposal by most of the parties at the table, actually provides for the first time in the Landlord-Tenant Act a provision saying that if there's a minor error in giving of the notice, it doesn't make the landlord liable for anything. It doesn't prevent a sale to another party. Okay? So we don't need to do anything more about all tenants. Questions about that?
No, thanks.
So I'm going to count on my mentor here to tell me if I'm not saying enough. The second issue had to do with a phrase saying that the owner, this is in section 1 of the dash 3 on the first page, section 1 sub 1, an owner shall give written notice of the owner's interest in selling the park before the owner markets the park for sale or when the owner receives an offer to purchase that the owner intends to consider. And there was concern raised that the term market is not clear. I think market is pretty clear. I think most of us understand what it means to market a piece of real property. I would note for you that we defined that concept in House Bill 3007, which all the landlords opposed. And one of the reasons they opposed was because 3007 was way, way, way too complicated. So we took we took 10 lines of text to define what we meant about market there. But the main point here is that the landlord controls this part of the process completely. This only happens if a landlord decides he or she wants to sell. If he or she does not want to sell, there's no obligation to give a notice. The notice obligation only arises when a landlord, in his or her own discretion, totally at his or her own discretion, decides he or she wants to sell. He or she is the person who's going to decide whether he or she's marketing the property. And obviously, if you've sold the property without doing the notice, unless you've got an exemption, and we've specified exemptions in here, if you sold the property, you've gone without giving the notice, you've gone too far. But that's for the landlord to figure out. The third issue that we talked about with Representative Wisnett about trying to clarify had to do with 1031 exchanges. Current law has some wording about that, but it's not clear, and we believe that the new version in dash 3, 4038 makes that clearer. So a 1031 tax-free exchange, and I am not a tax lawyer, but the point is that under the federal income tax code, if you sell real property and then buy like kind, which basically means other real property, within a certain period of time, you are not taxed on the capital gains from the sale of your first property. Okay. So how that plays into this dynamic with landlords is that sometimes landlords will have a buyer who will come to them and, especially in the boom days before the recession, say, I got to buy some property really quick. And I don't have anything else, and my time's running out, and I want to buy your property. And because I'm in need to move quickly, I'm going to pay you top dollar. So what we've done here is make it clear that in those transactions, the landlord doesn't have to do any of this stuff. The landlord has to file an affidavit saying with the county saying, I don't have to comply because I've done this. That's a procedure that exists in the current statute. But if the landlord does that, that buyer is safe. I mean, that buyer is not at risk of the sale being set aside at all. So that's sort of that upleg from the 1031 exchange buyer would exempt the landlord, the owner, from that transaction, from having to do all this process. The landlord going forward might also want to do a 1031 exchange after he or she sells the park by buying another piece of property too. But because the landlord in that point controls the issue is just not there for them. So we've tried to make it clear that the 1031 exchange, if it's a buyer who has a 1031 exchange, they're exempted from the process. Questions about those things?
I think not.
I was hoping to say a couple of general things about the value, but you're the chair, and you tell me no. What we're doing here. I'm not talking about the substance of the bill. I know you've heard plenty about the substance of the bill.
Very briefly. We have.
Yes, you've got a lot
on
to
our
do.
Agenda.
I want to note that this kind of tenancy is unusual. You know, in most cases, and this is what I mostly do, apartment tenants. Apartment tenants move all the time. Park tenants don't. And they're a different kind of tenant. They own their manufactured home. They rent the land, but they own the manufactured home. This arrangement is incredibly difficult, but also incredibly valuable. Manufactured home parks are the largest source of affordable housing privately developed in the United States. and in Oregon. That's significant. It's a relationship that we need to foster. We need to find a way to work together. That's the point of the coalition, is to work as partners to find ways for us to cooperate and make the law work for both parties. And that's what we feel that we have done with this bill.
Thank you, John. Okay. Nobody has a question, I'm assuming. Okay, great. So, Mr. Greff.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Finally getting it.
Thank you very much. And I want to start by thanking all of the committee members very much for your time and patience, and also Representative Wisen, a real hats off to you for all the work you've put into this, along with a hats off to Representative Nathanson for the great job she's done. I want to thank John. I want to thank Chuck for your work on this as well. We had a productive meeting on Monday night. Improvements were made to the bill, and I applauded that process as being productive. But unfortunately, we felt the bill doesn't go far enough in terms of amendments. And one of the real conceptual hurdles that I think we need to address is the idea of tenant organization ahead of time. You could have situations in a mobile home park, in fact, they happen all the time, where you have multiple factions of tenant groups. Multiple people profess to be the head of any number of tenant associations. You could have one tenant association invoke the process, and 25 days later, the second association does it, and on and on and on. And the problem with the way this bill is framed is that it doesn't define that, doesn't prevent that from happening. It doesn't define a designated contact person with whom the park owner should deal with from the very first day of the process. There are ambiguous terms, and I appreciate that legislative history helps that, but terms that are vague, and I've identified those for the committee already, are a lawyer's field day, and that is something that I think we're trying not to do. There was a memorandum that I gave to the committee members earlier from the Oregon Park Owners Alliance clarifying substantive amendments that I would hope that all of you would take a moment to read. It was just given to you before you make a decision on this bill today. And as you can see, there are quite a number of areas that need to be clarified and developed. So I would ask you to do that. I would also ask that you remember that before you vote on this bill, this represents a sea change as to the way business is done now in terms of buying and selling mobile home parks. This is unprecedented. It is a radical expansion of an existing right of first refusal for which there's never been a problem. So that being said, I would ask that you ask that you send this back to the work group, that you not move it out of this committee, that we work on it and work toward consensus for the 2015 session. I will say that in all the years I've been doing this since the late 1990s, practically every bill that has come before a committee has been a consensus bill. It's been one that we've worked on back and forth. And this bill is not a consensus bill. It does not have the consensus of the Oregon Park Owners Alliance, and there is a real philosophical divide in terms of how the process starts and the need for tenant organization at the front end. That is our biggest concern here. So I would ask that you not move this out of committee, but you send us back to keep working on this. And just look at the work we accomplished on Monday night. That was just one night, and we've got four big concessions. Just think what we could do before 2015. We really could make this a much better, more fair, and evenly balanced bill. So I thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Griff.
And your patience.
Okay, and tell us again how many park owners parks are represented.
I'm going to revise the estimate I gave on Monday.
Okay.
And probably more between 40 and 60 park owners. In terms of spaces, I couldn't tell you how many spaces.
Okay.
I haven't researched that.
All right. Great.
But it's significant.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, I had more of a comment. I appreciate that this is a difficult issue, which is why there's been so much work on it for so long. And my hat is really off to Representative Wisnett and Representative Nathanson for all of the work they've put into this. I do hope, Madam Chair, that we move the bill today. This clearly has a tremendous amount of compromise in it. I think the bill was ready to go on Monday, but I'm glad that the partners were willing to continue to work and clearly make some concessions. And that's really the way that collaboration works. And the best way to get invited into a work group and be part of a work group is to kind of accept those collaborations and compromises sometime, and I think that's what happened. And ultimately, a decision has to be made. I think that we're there, and I hope we move today, and I hope if we hear from this in the future that maybe that spirit of collaboration goes both ways, and there's good faith in the negotiations.
Thank you, Representative. We don't have...
Madam Chair, we don't have the fiscal.
Right, we don't have the fiscal yet, so we can't go into a work session until we get the fiscal. So I'm going to be closing the public hearing, and we'll open up...
Mr. Carpenter, did you want to hear from Mr. Carpenter?
Madam Chair? Mr. Carpenter just said he didn't. He was deferring.
He was done.
Yeah. Just wanted to make sure.
Yes. Right? Okay. So we will close the public hearing, and we'll open up a work session when we get the fiscal. So thank you very much, gentlemen. And thank you, Representative Nathanson and Representative Wisnett. Thank you very much. Good job.
Madam Chair, we have just contacted Representative Hammer, but there are a lot of regards if you want to call them up next.
Okay.
She should be here in the next 5 minutes.
Okay, terrific. So, colleagues, we're going to open up the first public hearing on House Bills 4028 and 4040.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 4028 increases the amount of Administrative Services Economic Development Fund dollars transferred to Problem Gambling Treatment Fund from 1 to 1.2%, requires 16.67% of Problem Gambling Treatment Fund to be expended to promote and advertise prevention and treatment of gambling addiction, adds legislative finding that addicting persons to gambling is not consistent with the public good, operative July 1, 2014, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a Dash 1 amendment that replaces the measure. It permits the Oregon State Lottery to use existing dollars allocated for the cost of administration and furtherance of state policy to minimize the risks and mitigate the harms of problem gambling. House Bill 4040, excuse me, before I finish with House Bill 4028, there is a minimal fiscal on the Dash 1, and the revenue statement is pending. Depending on the revenue statement, we have received advance permission to rescind the subsequent referral to rate Ways and Means if the if it's all right with the Revenue Office. That's been obtained. House Bill 4040 requires the Oregon State Lottery to balance their obligation to maximize net revenues with their obligation to serve the public good, requires the lottery to adopt a comprehensive responsible gambling policy integrating consideration of responsible play into retail operations and marketing practices, requires the lottery consult with stakeholders to develop the policy, specifies the content of the policy, requires an annual report to the appropriate legislative committees in cooperation with the Oregon Health Authority, and specifies the content of that report. We have a Dash 2 that's been received. There is no substantive effect in that amendment. It refers to terminals. It describes computers, gambling terminals, in two different ways.
Thank you.
And apologize, Whoa. Madam Chair. It has a minimal revenue and a minimal fiscal on the Dash 2.
Great. Thank Whoa. You.
Thank you, Representative Tomei and Representative Kenmer. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, colleagues, this is Representative Carolyn Tomei for the... your information. I'm so pleased to be here today presenting House Bills 4028 and House Bill 4040 to this committee relating to the Oregon lottery and gambling addictions. Representative Kennemer and I, and you as committee members, have worked for years to get to this point, and I want to thank all the advocates, many who are here, treatment providers, the Oregon Health Authority, and especially the new administration of the Oregon State Lottery for working with us to make these significant improvements possible. The new lottery director, Jack Roberts, who is here in the audience, and the new commission chair, Lisa DiZono, have worked tirelessly to help us craft legislation that achieves our mutual goals. And I also want to point out that Representative Kenny Geyer also worked with us on the work group, as did Representative Julie Parrish. So I want to thank you for your work also. You all know Representative Kennemer is a therapist, and he's going to talk more about the impacts on our economy and the horrendous toll that gambling addiction has on families. I'm just going to briefly outline, according to our committee administrator, some of the details of the bills. House Bill 4028, with the Dash 1 amendments you have before you, gives specific statutory authority for the Oregon State Lottery to resume its activities to minimize risks of problem gambling and mitigate the harms. It can advertise the availability of treatment programs, support the hotline number, collect data about vulnerable users, and work collaboratively with the Oregon Health Authority and other organizations to lessen the harmful impacts of problem gambling in our communities. The previous lottery administration has discontinued these services, and this bill gives legislative directives to reinstate them. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. For the record, Bill Kenemer, State Representative, District 39. Thank you for your time and for letting us come before you again. Come to you supporting both of these bills. Representative Tomei, appreciate working with you and Representative Kenny Geyer and actually all of us. I think we all are very concerned about the welfare of Oregonians. And particularly as a therapist, I'm very concerned about addictions. You're going to have a bill in a few minutes about another addiction, as a matter of fact. But gambling addiction, not quite as widely discussed as alcoholism, for example. But the estimates are that somewhere between 70 and 80,000 Oregonians, that's a gigantic percentage, are addicted to Oregon lottery. I mean, not talking Reno, we're talking Oregon stuff. So I think we have to be concerned about this, and it has a huge impact on the families and upon the people. We also know that there are social justice issues involved. Unfortunately, the majority of these addicts are going to be among the Oregonians that can least afford it. You know, if you're filthy rich, I think if you want to gamble away your money, that's perhaps a choice you have. But, you know, if you don't have much money and you're spending it, it's of great concern, although I think we need to be careful. And we learned a lesson, I think, from Prohibition years ago. Addictions can't be abolished by simply saying no. We have to find a way to do this. So what we've been doing in making progress is the lottery has been cooperative in the past in creating some ads and supporting prevention. However, not too long ago, we hit a hiccup. And there was some concern about the funding of prevention. So what House Bill 4028 does is it clarifies that we're going to keep the status quo. We don't want to raise hackles and create problems in a short session. We want to maintain the status quo. But we do want to keep that funding. And incidentally, I would say it's very nice to have our new director in place. I think Mr. Roberts has been very cooperative, and he wants to fund at that level, so that's also helpful. But I think it's good to make it statutory, because we just realized that if we weren't careful, hiccups can occur and we can lose that funding. So I think it's important to put it in statute, and I don't think that's very controversial to continue to do what we were doing. I suspect that in coming sessions, some of us will have some more ideas about some things that ought to be done. But I think this one, these two bills are actually very modest, and I think we need to realize that addicting people to gambling is not commensurate with public good, and we need to be saying that in a very proper way, and we need to do awareness. Everybody is aware of alcoholism. Not everybody thinks very much about gambling, but the impacts are dramatic. And with that, I guess I would ask for your support for both bills, and if you have any questions, certainly we're available.
Any questions?
We're off the hook.
All right.
Well, we've asked for your support, so thank you so much. Please.
Can I just offer a comment again, like I did the other panel? I've seen how hard you've worked on this, and again, how many years you've worked on this. I really want to thank you, again, like the previous panel, not only for all your time, but your bipartisan efforts.
Yes, I've really appreciated this.
Well,
yes,
it's been very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we... those who have signed up to testify, I'm going to call up Jack Roberts, Tim Murphy, and Karen Wheeler. And then there's another panel that I'll call up afterwards that want to vote or testify on both. So, Mr. Roberts, if you want to go ahead and get started.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery. And first thing I should explain, the way it works in state government is that the executive branch is led by the governor and the governor's office, and they decide what bills we can take a position on and which ones we cannot. And they have authorized me to speak in behalf of and strong support of House Bill 40, during 28. The governor's office is not taking a position on 4040. I'll just address briefly both of them, but we are very, very pleased that the legislature is taking the steps to clarify our authorization to spend lottery dollars in helping not only to advertise about responsible gambling, which everyone has agreed we can, but there's been some legal question raised about our ability to spend it on the problem gambling, and particularly ads that we ran trying to help encourage people to seek help and get treatment. We had one award-winning ad which showed, in this case it was women speaking in a powder room about gambling and talking about someone that they knew and talking about that person, and one of them spoke up and said, a year ago that could have been me. And you know, people were kind of surprised by that, and she made an explanation of how it was, and then after everyone else left, one of the people came back in and said, can we talk? That was a very effective way of explaining that this is not simply a problem for people who are indigent or poor or irresponsible. It affects people in all walks of life. It won an award, but that's one of the ads that we had been advised we couldn't run because that was not really dealing with the operation of the lottery. It was dealing with treatment. This gives us the ability, and it recognizes that we do, and it does that in two ways. One, by putting us part of our administration, it does recognize that we have a responsibility. If we're going to have lottery and gambling in the state, we all have a responsibility to make sure that we mitigate those adverse impacts on vulnerable people. But the other thing it does for us, frankly, is it allows us to help in marketing our lottery to show people that they can play our games and participate and not feel guilty that they are supporting something that is creating problems without any sense of responsibility in dealing with it. So it is like corporations understand the need to advertise their environmental sensitivities or their social values or the support they have for worthy cause to build up the integrity and support the integrity of their organization. We're the same way as a lottery. We want to make sure that people understand we're living up to our responsibilities, so we think it's important. Now, in 4040, as I said, we're technically neutral about it, but I will commend Representative Tomei. She's worked with us. She's basically including in there the steps that we have announced that we're taking. We want to move forward, and she's putting that in statute, and we have no problem with that. At the end, there is a provision, and that's what the amendment you have talks about, is it has a reporting requirement. We just want to make sure that the information we're required to report is stuff that is available to us, and we have that. And so I that's why when we looked at that, we said that this is within our existing resources. We're not asking for additional resources because these are things that we're committed to doing anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. I appreciate that. Karen? Any questions? I should ask that before we move on. Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Wheeler, and I'm an administrator with the Oregon Health Authority at the Addictions and Mental Health Division, and part of my responsibility is to administer problem gambling prevention and treatment services for the Oregon Health Authority. And we're here to testify in support of the -1 amendments to this bill, which would authorize coordination and cooperation between the lottery and the health authority, as well as providers of problem gambling treatment, and additional data collection activities, as we understand it, in the amendments, and adoption and implementation of rules to reduce problem gambling. Just to make a statement about the ads, when we had ads rolling, we did see spikes in the number of people who called the helpline. We support a 24-hour problem gambling helpline. We also saw spikes in the number of people who enrolled in treatment. An effective, ongoing, and credible statewide promotional campaign is crucial for problem gambling treatment. Typically, people who are addicted to substances, alcohol, drugs, their referral pathways into treatment are much different than people who have problem gambling issues. So most of the clients in addiction treatment, for instance, are referred by the criminal justice system. They're referred by their health care practitioners, wives, husbands, employers sometimes, and it's much different for problem gamblers. It's a very hidden addiction. In fact, nationally, only 1 in 10 people actually seek treatment for problem gambling. Problem gambling is not on the radar screen, as was mentioned earlier, for most people in Oregon. People just don't think about it. There's a lack of awareness. So that's another reason why we believe the ads are tremendously important to reinstate. think that's all of my substantive comments. I do have some data if the committee is interested in sharing that later. We have data that shows the trends in the number of people who called the helpline and who access treatment when the ads are actually running. And I would just say, final statement, we would be thrilled, happy to coordinate and cooperate and work together with the Oregon Lottery.
Thank you, Karen. Any questions? Thank you. We've had that data before in here. We've heard a lot of data on how important this is, so thank you.
Representative Tomei, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be back here again talking with you about the problems of problem gambling. It's the first time in my tenure that I've been able to sit here with the lottery commissioner, with the Oregon Health Authority, and myself, and we're all asking for you to support the same bill. We've come a long way, So I really appreciate that. And I think it's a new direction for the Oregon State Lottery as well. I'd also like to commend you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kennemer for the work that you've done. I've been working with you for years now. It has been really a commitment on your part that has made some of the changes and made some of the opportunities for Oregonians to receive treatment. I'm here today I'm Tim Murphy. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Bridgeway Recovery Services here in Salem. We have a large outpatient treatment program and the only residential treatment program in the Northwest for people suffering from symptoms of problem gambling. Recently, there was a series of articles in the Oregonian that really outlined some significant issues that hopefully all of you read and took to heart, and we'll have opportunities throughout the year to talk more about those. But one of the things this legislature did years ago was earmark dollars from the Oregon State Lottery for treatment, and it's effective treatment. And I'm here today not speaking so much for the treatment providers, but for the thousands of Oregonians that seek this treatment and need it. It's great to have a broad treatment community available, but if people don't know about it, they can't access it. And we've seen a definite decrease in requests for treatment, even though we know the problem is increasing. So I'm here on behalf of all of those folks in treatment to ask your support, along with the Commissioner of Lottery and the Oregon Health Authority, to approve the funding for the continuation of the advertising piece. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you so much, all of you.
Okay. So Madam Chair?
Yes.
I had a question. Mr. Roberts, please.
Yes.
Mr. Roberts, thank you for your testimony. I know this is something we all support, but this is unusual. We're putting an amount of money in a policy bill for your agency. Is that for this by a 2-year period, or is it for forever? Or
we're actually not asking for any additional money. We have the money. We were prepared. It was in our budget. We had been spending it up until earlier last year when we got a opinion from the DOJ that said that our office requested at the time and said we couldn't spend it for those things. So we're just simply asking to have restored to us the authority to spend the money we already have and are planning to spend.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
But so it's still going to Ways and Means. The Ways and Means could reduce that amount or not give you back what you want? Or
well, whether it goes to Ways and Means is I guess, the call. Initially, I think the bill would have actually changed the appropriation of money that was being allocated by the lottery to education and economic development, and the idea was to move that. We're just basically taking that out.
A gut and stuff. You have the dash one, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great.
So this actually should not result in, I don't think it should result in a referral to Ways and Means because we're not changing the money. We're just simply freeing us up and allowing us to do what we were doing before.
One other question, Madam Chair. So also then you're taking out the amount of money. So does that get us out of the problem that South Carolina's had with the spending their money?
I guess I'm not familiar with South Carolina's problem with that. They may have had a similar issue that we did. They questioned them spending money on certain things. The purpose of this is to try to give the legislative authority for us to spend the money on that. Nothing guarantees that someone won't bring some legal action against us, although it's hard to imagine who would be suing us to get us to stop spending money dealing with problem gamblers.
Not a legislator, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think what we're trying to do is to flesh out what we believe the authority
authority is already there, that in deciding how to spend our administrative dollars, and incidentally, in the Constitution, we are limited. Our administrative costs can't be above 16%, and they're running 3%. So we have some slack there to spend on administration. We think this is an important part of administration, and that's what we're asking you to help us create the legal basis to do what we have been doing and what we continue doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So next we will have Jeff Murata, Wes Wood, and Sharon Williams. Start your testimony, just identify yourself, and just start right now.
Good afternoon. I'm Wes Wood. I'm here with Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. We are a offshoot project of the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling. 6 years in the making now. We're now 501c3 to do the work we do. I'm here as president. Our mission is to advocate, educate, and promote healthy recovery. We provide statewide speakers bureaus, outreach with care providers, peer mentor certification and training, placement, work with government, and the Oregon Lottery. It's imperative, especially now, that action be taken to minimize the damage to our citizens, our economy, and their families. Each of these bills are a part of that work. It is key for the public to know their options and the availability of the treatment and care. Declining numbers in treatment do not represent a lesser problem, quite the opposite. I urge you through these bills to make part of a better future for Oregonians. I've attached to my handout a couple pages of comments that were returned to me after I spoke to student population at George Fox College this year. These were graduate students in psychology. I attended an event with Dr. Tom Moore, and we spoke directly to the life of problem gambling. And I attached those so that you may have an opportunity at your leisure to read those and maybe reflect on what that world really looks like and the chaos that comes with it. On a small side note, indulge me as I was gathering my notes 9 years ago today. I entered treatment. So I did call my counselor and tell him thank you. So it is life-saving work. You know, it's worth saying. And the other thing I'll say to you is I travel statewide doing events, speaking to care providers. I speak to outreach groups, whether it's ER staff or whether it's a Rotary or an Elks Club, whatever that may be. And what I can tell you in this last year around this hesitation in our commitment to getting the word out, one of the perceptions that I see everywhere is people think treatment has gone away because the advertising has gone. And that is a true tragedy at this point. So thank you all so much for your hard work on this. It's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your recovery. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Questions, okay? I'm Sharon Williams. I am a member of Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery, and also I'm on the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling. Personally, I am a recovering gambling addict. I gambled for many years while my children were small. I destroyed every area of my life when I was gambling. When I quit gambling, I went to a psychiatric ward because I had a suicide attempt. And they didn't know what to do with me because they knew about alcohol and drugs and they knew about mental health and depression and all that stuff. But they actually told me that I didn't need to go to the groups because I'm a gambler. So it didn't apply to me. So Eventually, I did become involved in a recovery program, and I'm still involved with that. And over the years, I have just developed really a passion for doing this work to help people who have a gambling problem. You know, I still see people come in to the meetings I go to, whether that's a 12-step meeting or a Voices meeting or Hands Across the Bridge or whatever it is we're doing, and they're just... they're blinded, you know, they have that glassy look of they don't know what to do, and they think they're the worst person in the world and nobody else is like them. So, you know, I like to be there for those people. And I have so much appreciated that Oregon has had an excellent recovery treatment programs, and I've actually been fortunate enough to be able to work in that field as well. I'm mostly retired now, so pretty much everything I do, like talking, is voluntary. But I think it's so important to keep these services going and to maintain constant visibility for our programs in this state, because the gamblers that need the help, they're only going to see this when they're ready. So it can't just be, you know, twice a year or three times a year that these messages are sent out. It needs to be somewhat, something on a repeated nature. So I support both of these bills, and I hope that you guys pass these. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming to testify today. And I think you make a really good point. We're talking about these messages coming on continually. And it's a hidden addiction, it seems. You know, you can see when somebody is... Often you can see somebody who's high on drugs or high on alcohol. But gambling addiction is a hidden addiction. And so it's important to see these ads on television and other media so people realize it's not just me. I don't know anybody else who's addicted to gambling. It's not just me. There is treatment out there. So thank you for bringing that up, Sharon. You're welcome. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Chair Timmy, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Morata. I am the owner and senior consultant of a firm that I began, Problem Gambling Solutions. I've been involved in problem gambling for my entire professional career. I was the problem gambling services manager over with Oregon Department of Human Services beginning in 2000 to 2007. Since then, I went out and began this consulting business and developed a specialization in responsible gaming, and have worked with the Oregon Lottery up until very recently, since my departure from state government. So I have a 13-year relationship with the Oregon Lottery, and I've seen the coming and going of five different directors. And I've seen different levels of commitment and efforts placed on responsible gambling practices. And due to this this waxing and waning that has occurred over the 13 years that I've bared witness to these efforts, I can tell you it's very gratifying to see that some of the what is kind of moving forward now with the responsible gambling policy that the Oregon Lottery has adopted, that will be codified and that will provide some assurances that we'll no longer have this waxing and waning that has taken place over the past 13 years. So that is a tremendous and very important step forward. I would like to very much express my appreciation toward Representative Tomei and the committee for their hard work on this, and I've been involved in some of it. And it's very gratifying to be here at this stage where we can receive the type of consensus that we have in support of these bills. And you have my written testimony in front of you, so I'm not going to read it for you. But I will say that these bills are incredibly important. One of the other things that these bills do that is vital is it directly links the Oregon Lottery's principles of integrity, security, honesty, and fairness with the provision of gambling services in a way that seeks to minimize harm to consumers and the community associated with gambling. That is very important to basically help everybody better understand what commensurate with the public good means. So these bills go such a long way in bringing us closer, I think, to a healthier Oregon, one that will see fewer gambling-related problems, and a lottery that will, I think, become a pinnacle of operation of social responsibility. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Any quick questions of the panel? Thank you very much. The last person we have signed up is Jonathan Eames. Is he here? There he is. Oh, no. Yes, that's it. Hi, Jonathan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jonathan Eames, and I'm here on behalf of Cascadia Behavior Healthcare and the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association. And since I'm the only one left, I only have a short 45-minute testimony.
Great.
No, actually, for all the great things that have been said prior to this testimony, we have seen at Cascadia in particular, and actually you also have some testimony there from Philip Yasinoff, who is the director of our gambling services in Cascadia, one of the larger providers of gambling treatment services in the state of Oregon, actually in the United States as well. We have seen a precipitous drop in the number of people that have actually called in and actually tried to get gambling service or treatment services since the advertising has gone away. So we have on-the-ground real experience and identifiable data to show that actually the terrible thing is the advertising went away. The good thing is that we know it was working. So kudos to the lottery for that. But we really do need to make this fix. It's something that's very important, and we really do, as Representative Kennerman said, keep the status quo going. So I won't belabor the point. This is very good thing. These are very good things to do. Anything we can do to support and fund and invest more in gambling treatment is a good thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any quick questions? All right. Thank you so much.
I have a question, Chair.
Yes.
Can I make a comment, though?
Sure.
I just want to thank the Chair Representative Kennemore. I mean, I can't imagine the suffering that this addiction brings to people and to their families. And so I think this bill is really important. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Thank you again, Representative Kennegeyer. And thanks to Representative Kennemer, I imagine he's gone by now. I think we don't have the material. Do we have enough to pass it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 4040 is ready on the -2. It's 4028. I would like to clarify, we're trying to keep up with the pace of the committees. The subsequent referral on that measure still exists on all of the databases that the Revenue Office is referring to.
Oh.
The verbal authorization, the letter of permission from the Speaker's office, is received depending on the statements that issue. So the revenue impact you see at the dais that recently issued doesn't account for the fact that we have permission to rescind the subsequent referral. I want to make sure that was clear.
Okay.
That was part of the confusion, perhaps, for Representative Wisnett. So that is the measure that's not ready. 4040 is ready on the -2. 4028 is not ready on the -1.
Okay, so we're going to vote on 4040. Okay. Okay, so we've already opened the work session, right?
Yes. We are in a public hearing and work session.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Okay, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated 5-2014 into House Bill 4040.
Representative, what is his name? Olson. Move to adopt the -2 amendments dated 2-5-14 and with the -2 amendments dated 2-5-14. Any discussion?
Question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Question for Mrs. Ross. I'm sorry, I haven't read the bill. So we're going to rescind with a letter from the Speaker the subsequent referral of Ways and Means on 4028. So why wouldn't 4040 have a referral too? Because we're talking about money being.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, we aren't yet on the verge of rescinding the subsequent referral on 4028. That would happen if the committee is inclined to move the bill.
4040, Representative.
We are only adopting the amendment. That's the active motion. 4040, that is within the sound discretion of the Speaker's office, referrals to Ways and Means. I don't have an answer for that.
So it's a change in mission, but nothing financial, correct?
Right.
That's why 4040 doesn't have
the -1 that says that.
The -1 is for 4028.
There's no.
There's a dash two on 4040.
The statement it has on 4040 requires Oregon State Lottery Commission to balance its obligation to maximize net revenues with the obligation to serve public good. Is that, that's a mission statement, and is just changing the statement? It's so, it's saying obligation to maximize the net revenue. That's what I was bringing up about the South Carolina situation where they were sued, the state was, because they were using lottery money to treat.
Can I? We do allow lottery money for treatment. Remember, we put a floor on it in 2013. We put, so we could not use any less money than that.
Chair, may I?
Yes.
Offer comment?
Sure.
Having worked on that committee, and we spent a lot of time talking about the mission statement and was it clear enough, and the way we were interpreting the mission statement about commensurate with the public good was the public good is not just the budgeting benefit that comes from lottery dollars, but the public good also means the overall public health of the state, and that then that carries the spirit with it that you have to balance collecting dollars with making sure that you're not getting dollars in a way that harms people. But we felt that that definition didn't wasn't clear enough. And so this is really a mission, a clarity of the mission statement to say that that's what the balance has to be. But it's not a direct fiscal impact.
Am I interpreting the legislation in front of you? All you have is the
staff summary.
Yes, do you have the bill?
Here, okay. I have it for you.
Mm-hmm. I'll go, Madam Chair, go ahead. We'll just move it and I'll.
Okay, terrific. Okay. So we have a motion. Any other questions? This is 4040 that we're moving.
Motion to adopt the amendments.
Yes.
And are we moving to adopt the amendments, both amendments, amendments one and two?
You only have the one set of amendments, dash okay. one's on.
Okay, dash
two.
Okay,
excuse me.
You're right. Okay. Dash 2 is on 4040, and that's what we're moving, right? The dash 2 amendment? Okay. Any objection to moving the dash 2 amendment? Say none? Now where do we go? Okay.
You've accepted that. Okay.
Okay. So we've accepted the amendment. Now,
okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4040 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 4040 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I must always say how impressed I am with your commitment to this issue and your compassion for the people that, such as we heard from today, whose lives have been ravaged by this. I have to say that I am very encouraged by the governor's selection of a new director. I think we've got a man of complete integrity. Here's the but. I don't know why we continue to look at the lottery for our solution, despite the fact that the statute has language saying that they must, for the public good, spend time on addiction prevention, despite their mission. I think we continue to focus on the wrong bureaucracy, the wrong department. And I have very little faith in their ability over the long term because of the nature of what they do to be effective at what we're trying to do. And I think we ought to be asking the question, should we abolish the lottery? Because it's the state of Oregon that's addicted. And with that, with great respect, I will be a no.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please. Right?
That's
doing
correct.
The right thing, right? Okay. Call the roll, right?
Are we adopting the amendment, Madam Chair? Or have
we did.
We have adopted the amendment. Now we're moving to sending the floor with the due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Gallego?
Aye.
Representative
Gelser? Aye. Representative Gilliam? No. Representative Kinguire? Aye. Representative Leininger? Aye. Representative Wisnett? Madam Chair, I'm going to vote no, but I may change my mind on the
floor. I'd like to
check this out.
I'll be a no.
Okay.
Representative Wisnett?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Thank you, committee. It's a long time coming. I will be the chair. Okay, so now I've got to close House Bill 4048, right? Or do I just carry it to the end of today's meeting?
We'll be closing the public hearing on 4040 and suspending the work session in case we get the document.
You're talking about 4048, right?
4049,
Chairman Lottery. The basic. At least two. We just passed the lottery. So I'm closing the work session.
Excuse me, 4020. Yes, that's correct. 4020. Not 4048. 4028.
Okay, so I'm closing the public hearing and the work session on 4040, right?
On 4040, correct.
All right. And, but I'm holding open the work session on 4028. Okay, got it. Okay, because we're hoping we get that information before the end of the day. Thank you. With that, we will open up, thank you, the hearing and a possible work session on 4073 and 4115. So, do you want to give us the measure
yes,
summary?
Yes, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 4073 and House Bill 4114 touch on the same subject matter. House Bill 4073 expands the applicability of laws governing minors' access to, possession, and use of tobacco products to include vapor products. House Bill 4115 expands the applicability of laws governing minors' access to, possession, and use of tobacco products to include vapor products. It also extends the applicability of laws governing adult use of tobacco products in public places to include vapor products, meaning Oregon Clean Indoor Air Act, public meetings, places of employment, hospitals. Expands the prohibition against smoking in motor vehicles with a child present to include vaping. Declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Olson, and is Representative Barnhart here?
Yes, he is.
Oh, great. Thank you, Representative. Will you come up and talk about your bill? Welcome to our committee, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the State Representative from House District 11, and I thought we were going to have Ledge Council come and explain some of the differences.
And he's right there. Why don't we have
him? And it would be wonderful if he could do that before I give my testimony.
Sure, that would be great.
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, Vice Chair Gomberg. Excuse me if my voice is a little cracking. I got a little bit of a sore throat today, so
excuse
you. So I was asked to come down and briefly describe the drafting process for the bills as well as the distinct differences between the two because they are very similar and because of certain issues that have arisen since the drafting.
Just state your name for the record, please.
Excuse me. Name for the record is Mark Mayer from Ledge Council. Thank you. So both bills do two things with respect to vapor products as well as statutes that currently prohibit the use and consumption of tobacco products by minors. They both define vapor product. The definitions are very similar. I'll go over that in just a minute. And they both update statutes related to the consumption and exposure of tobacco products by minors so that those statutes equally apply to vapor products. House Bill 4115 also, as the summary was just read, updates those statutes related to the use of tobacco products in public places, so they also equally apply to vapor products. And that would be the major distinction between the two. It was mentioned that I should it was requested that I should mention that in preparing the bills, I did look at every statute that contains the terms tobacco product, tobacco, cigarette, and smoking in order to ensure that we would update all the appropriate statutes. Statutes that were not added to the bill and not amended into the bill were either unrelated to the subject matter, and in some cases they involved programs that involved involved federal monies, and we didn't want to amend those statutes for obvious reasons. Didn't want to jeopardize any kind of funding mechanism. And finally, it was requested that I mention that none of the statutes are amended in any way except for the fact that they add vapor products so that the statute equally applies. There are no other substantive changes in these bills, as you can see if you just read through it. And then finally, it was requested that I go through the definition for vapor product. I think as most people here know, if a court needs to discern legislative intent, it's going to use the PGE and State versus Gaines rubric in order to look at legislative intent. Under that methodology, court is going to look at the plain meaning of the text and the context of the statute first, and then it'll look at the legislative record. Plain meaning will be discerned by looking to the dictionary in order to discern what the legislature meant when it incorporated certain words into the text of a statute. So the first, in both bills, vapor product has two meanings. First, vapor product is an electronic device designed to heat nicotine solutions and other solutions for the purpose of producing a vapor to be inhaled by the user of the device. Second, a vapor product is a nicotine solution in any form designed to be used with such a device. There's an important caveat there involving a Dash 1 amendment, which I'll discuss at the very end of my testimony. So if you look at the dictionary and you look at the components of the definition, design means to have as a purpose or to devise for a specific function or end. Solution means a homogeneous mixture, not necessarily liquid. Vapor means diffused matter. And so if you kind of string these different definitions together, you could come up with vapor product is an electronic device that has as its purpose the heating of homogeneous mixtures, including homogeneous nicotine mixtures, for the purpose of producing diffused matter to be inhaled. Thank you, Representative Olson. And then for the second piece of the definition for both bills, a vapor product is also the nicotine solution itself that you use with the device. Now, the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4115, they remove the nicotine component of that definition. So a vapor product would then be any solution that you use with the device. That was an important distinction that Representative Barnhart wanted me to make about the Dash 1s. Is there anything else, Chair Tomei?
Any questions of Ledge Council? Thank you so much for coming. Would you stay in the audience, please, in case other questions do come up? Can you do that?
Yeah, I can do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Is that exactly
what you wanted? Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the distinction, because I think it's important for the committee to understand this distinction between the two bills. And I will say that we have been working hard trying to write a bill that is simple in its effect, even though it gets fairly complex in the drafting because of the way in which our tobacco laws are scattered through the statutes. And so really what this bill does is it catches up to the technology that's already in place in our society. It doesn't break any new ground. It simply applies the rules we already have to smoking, to these new products that other people have told me are not covered by our existing statute, even though many of the effects are the same. Now, the key difference, I think, between these two bills is that while both bills restrict the sale to minors, actually prohibit the sale to minors, the 4115 also prohibits the use of these devices and the solutions that you heat in them in places where smoking is not permitted now, so it's easy to apply. Public health officials have told us that one of the biggest benefits of this bill is the addition to the Clean Air Act, because it would reduce the behavior of modeling to young adults or young and children. I think everyone in this room agrees that we should not encourage or provide for smoking or the use of these products by adolescents and young adults to the extent that we possibly can manage that, because of the addictive nature of the substances, because we're dealing with growing brains, because we're dealing with growing bodies, and these young people are particularly susceptible to the addiction process that takes place. The other things that we know about the addictive process is that it isn't simply a prohibition that works. What works are a whole constellation of things, one of which is the lack of a normative situation that allows people to see the use of these products in normal situations, and which therefore would encourage them to think this is cool, this is wonderful, this is something I ought to get involved in. The reality is that anyone who wants cigarettes can find them, even despite the fact that it's illegal for young people to get them or use them. Anyone, young people, if they want them, can find e-cigarettes. The task for the legislature and the task for our society as a whole is to prevent the addictive process by doing a whole bunch of other things, one of which is covered particularly by this bill, 4115. Data analyzed by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention show that the number of adult Americans who have used e-cigarettes has quadrupled from 2009 to 2010. It also showed that from the National Youth Tobacco Survey that e-cigarette use doubled among middle and high school students in 2011-2012. Nicotine harm reduction should also be questioned, as e-cigarettes perpetuate the use of nicotine by allowing users and tobacco smokers to get from one cigarette to the next when tobacco users might otherwise quit. You use cigarettes in the morning at work, you use e-cigarettes at the restaurant, you use e-cigarettes at the waiting room at the airport, you use e-cigarettes, and then you can get back to your regular smoke once you get home at night. And so we're perpetuating the use of these devices. Additionally, false claims of safety have enticed those who have already quit to start again. I had a conversation just last week with somebody who told me that they used to smoke cigarettes, that they had stopped and had not used nicotine at all for a time, and then began using it again, believing that e-cigarettes were safe. The health impacts of these devices... So,
Representative, I just want to clarify. Are you saying that that person started using e-cigarettes?
Yes, after having stopped using regular cigarettes for a period of time. And so these are beguiling devices that that we do not want to encourage as a matter of public policy. I think the other obvious point has to do with the health impact, not just on the person who's using them, but also on everybody else in the area. The reason why we have the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act is to protect second parties, people who are not using these materials from being exposed to them directly. People at work, people in classrooms who are there to study, people in the airport waiting room, waiting to get on an airplane and have to be there because that's where they have to be in order to get on the airplane, and on and on and on. These devices have chemicals that can negatively affect air quality for non-users. Imagine yourself in one of these places that I mentioned. People believe that e-cigarettes are a safe alternative to smoking, partly because of the advertising that's been done by tobacco companies and others. Although the Food and Drug Administration has warned that e-cigarettes contain, quote, carcinogens and toxic chemicals such as diethylene glycol, an ingredient used in antifreeze, close quote. The nicotine effects, I think, are pretty obvious, and I could go into those in detail, but I'll simply say that the December 2013, just a couple of months ago, a study from Roswell Park, one of the most respected cancer institutes in the world, talks about the nicotine effects on blood pressure, heart rate, vasoconstriction, blood vessel damage, stress, adverse effects on the brain and lung development in children, the effect on pregnant women with the increased risk of babies born with birth defects, and on and on and on. Some of these, at least, can be mitigated for people who do not use these products directly by restricting them, by restricting use to areas other than the ones that we regularly post as non-smoking. You're going to hear some things about how, you'll probably hear some things today about how these products can be used in tobacco harm reduction. I urge very clear caution as you listen to this testimony and as you look at it. No e-cigarette has been approved by the FDA for therapeutic use. If companies wanted to submit them for evaluation for therapeutic use, they could, but to date, not one e-cigarette company has chosen to go through the steps to be regulated as a tobacco cessation product. In 2009, the Oregon Attorney General successfully sued two companies, Sotera and Smoking Everywhere, notice the name, because they were marketing their products as safe in general and safer than conventional cigarettes. But neither of these businesses was able to show, was able to substantiate their claims. In fact, there was no indication that these were not harmful, that they did not have harmful carcinogenic agreements or were free of tar and other chemical substances that are produced in traditional cigarettes. Lab testing by the FDA found that tobacco-specific nitrosamines, which are known carcinogens in humans, were found. They also tested for ethylene glycol, an ingredient used in antifreeze, as I mentioned earlier, known to be highly toxic to humans, and they found these substances. The stipulated judgment that the Attorney General was able to obtain, and remember, stipulated judgment means that the company agreed to it, with Smoking Everywhere, included an express admission by the company that they'd violated Oregon's Unlawful Trade Practices Act, and they paid $95,000 to the department. My suspicion is to pay for the departmental costs in prosecuting them. Smoking Everywhere and Sotera were permanently barred from doing business in the state as a result of these claims. I would also note that there's very strong support around the state. Benton County, Clatsop County, Deschutes County, Hood River County, and Umatilla County have already passed smoke-free policies that explicitly include e-cigarettes. From the standpoint of uniformity, it's important to also ban the use of these devices for other substances. In the first place, we know that it's very easy to mix any number of flavorings. One of the companies we interviewed indicate they have 300 different products which contain all kinds of different scents or flavorings, and any of them can be mixed with nicotine to whatever level that you would like. So the only way you can actually control these devices in non-smoking areas is not only to ban the nicotine substance, but also any other substance. So in effect, what you're doing is banning the use of the device in a non-smoking area. Also, for the same reason, the sale to minors need to include the devices and all of the different things that are designed to be used to burn in those products. Some of them are in cartridges. Some of them come in a little bottle with a stopper and an eyedropper to place on the burning element in the device. They come in a variety of different ways. I suggest that the definition we have chosen here is designed not only to apply to the e-cigarettes that are available today, but also to the ones that are likely to be developed in the future as tobacco companies and others engage us in an arms race to get around our rules. It's very important to understand that their business model demands, they won't say this, but it's clear, their business model demands that they are able to addict a certain percentage, victimize a certain percentage of our young people every year in order to stay in business long term. People who don't start using these products until they're age 22 or 23 never become addicts, or almost never become addicts. It's important for them to work on the younger people. If we allow use of these devices in non-smoking areas, not only do we expose everyone else as a victim to these devices, but we also make it normative for kids to do that. Now, I want to say one of the things this bill does not do. I've heard around the room, the building, and so have you, about people who have been smoking all their lives, and all of a sudden they've discovered these devices, and now they're starting to use them instead. And anecdotally, they'll tell you that they feel better, and they don't cough as much, and those kinds of things. I'll point out that the studies that have been done in this area are purely anecdotal at this point. We don't have any good studies that demonstrate that it actually leads to health improvement. And, of course, they're still addicted to nicotine. But this bill does not restrict them from using e-cigarettes. It doesn't restrict the sale of e-cigarettes or the chemical or the material that goes in them to adults. Adults can still do that. If you are a chain smoker and you want to reduce your smoke, your other materials that go into your lungs, and you want to try using e-cigarettes to do that, you can do that. And I will point out to those who are sitting behind me who may be tempted to do that, that there's no evidence that we know now that suggests this actually helps people to stop using nicotine. But if you wanted to do it, this bill doesn't prevent you from doing that. All it does is that the people who cannot smoke now in no smoking areas would also not be allowed to use these devices in no smoking areas. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I urge you to adopt this this bill and send it on to the floor and then to the Senate. This bill has an emergency clause. The numbers of shops that sell these materials, there were six shops in before 2009, and now there are 87. That sell primarily these kinds of devices and the substance, mixing the substances that go in them. Seven shops were registered with the Secretary of State last month in January. It is important to get this done now, to get it done quickly. Every month we wait adds to the number of young addicts, young victims of these substances. Every month we wait. So it's important to get it done now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm ready to answer any questions. Great. Any quick questions? We need to move on because we have a lot of people who have signed up to testify. Any quick questions? Okay. I think we won't be passing any legislation today, maybe. But if we need to, we'll be calling you back, Representative.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Yes. Representative Olson. Can people stay after we're supposed to go until 4:45? Can you stay until 5? Pardon?
Do you want me to stay?
I really don't want you. Everybody but Representative Gillian. but if you could, that would be great, because a lot of people have traveled a long ways to be here. And we haven't heard anything more about the manufactured housing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4038 is still no fiscal, but House Bill 4028, in the meantime, has received an indeterminate fiscal, so it's ready any time for a work session.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. My name is Andy Olson, and I'm state representative from the Albany area. I do want to talk to you about House Bill 4073, which is electronic cigarettes to minors bill. I'm going to kind of just briefly go through the testimony I have that you have in front of you here. But many of you know that last year the state of Washington, along with 12 other states, passed legislation that dealt with electronic cigarettes being known as e-cigarettes to minors. And what this bill here, 4073, does, and would join 28 other states, basically would just prohibit the sale of e-cigarettes to minors. That's how simple this is. I do. I have some individuals who are behind me that I would love to have share with you a little bit some examples of what the machine itself is. Justin Newman, I think, and some others might be coming up. But also, there are some others too. Since Representative Barnhart alluded to the issue about no evidence for what the impact of changing from tobacco cigarettes to e-cigarettes creates for health. There are some members that are here that will tell you personal life stories, what it has done for them. But what are e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are a battery-operated product designed to deliver nicotine to the user by heating liquid nicotine derived from tobacco plants along with flavors and other chemicals into a vapor that the user inhales. As reported by the U.S. Surgeon General and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the nicotine found in e-cigarettes is highly addictive, has immediate biochemical effects on the brain and body at any dosage, and is toxic to the high doses. So, I mean, if you kind of get why it's kind of important to move forward to want to prohibit this. You should also know that of the individuals that are retailers around the state that I have had conversation with regarding this that sells this, they have already created a personal policy of their own not to sell to to minors. So, you know, and I really appreciate that effort from them and their consideration toward that. They'll be coming here and they'll be supporting what this bill is all about. So, yeah, you can read the rest of what I have there. I think my bill, 4073, is fairly simple. It's one of those things that we need to move on quickly with. It does create a violation. I mean, it moves it into the portion of the statute which is on this third page that deals with violations for endangering the welfare of a minor, and makes it a Class C violation.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, thank you for your testimony today, and I apologize for not getting you this question in advance, but I think you have a unique perspective on this one particular subject area. We recently passed legislation that prohibits people from smoking in cars with children present. And with your police background, I'm wondering if you might be able to comment on how an officer might be able to tell the difference between currently illegal smoking in vehicles versus currently legal smoking of electronic cigarettes that appear the same.
Well, that's a great question, Madam Chair and Representative Gomberg, great question. For one thing, the folks that are going to be coming up and testifying for me and the example, there are no studies about the impact of what the vapor or just that small moment of what that creates versus that of secondary hand smoke, you know, does, and which you can easily detect inside a motor vehicle in that compressed compartment. I've had the opportunity to witness and experience the vapor itself. It doesn't stay long. So a crucial piece is you're going to have to determine whether or not, in fact, you know, that did occur. And then here's the other thing, too, you're going to have to consider. Was there any nicotine in the substance itself? Because a lot of people are not using nicotine as they purchase, and you're going to hear that.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, if I can just restate my question, because I just want to make sure the representative understands. A police officer from a reasonable distance, can they tell the difference when they're observing a vehicle go by?
No. No. That's really difficult. See, you're going to have to be, you know, basically in a situation like that, you're going to almost have to be side-by-side traveling down a multiple-lane road to see that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Olson. We have a lot of people and who are signed up to testify. Several people are supportive of Representative Olson's bill. I don't think anybody has testified or is interested in testifying against it. We have several people who are more than 100 miles away, and I would remind you that that would be maybe Roseburg. I mean, Eugene would only be 50 miles south, and so we're talking probably about Roseburg. Somebody can help me. And so our stated policy is to invite people to come up who are 100 miles or more away, because we'll hear as many people as we can, and I will stay here and probably Representative Olson, as long as it takes to have make sure everybody who is here to sign up will have a chance to testify.
Madam Chair,
yes.
if I may,
yes.
One of the first people, I think, folks, Justin Newman would be a really good one to have up first. He's from Eugene, even though I realize that's not within the 100 miles, but he can really give you a great perspective. And I think a lot of the others that are supportive of this would, you know, be able to tag in on that.
Okay. So I'd be glad to have Justin come up here. And so I want to make sure there's Sarah Hartstein. And Sarah, where are you from?
She's from Corvallis.
I don't think Corvallis is 100 miles away, is it?
No.
No. Okay. Let's see. Tim Churchill? Medford, certainly you. Come on up, Tim. Dalton Barstad?
Yes, here.
And where are you from, Dalton? That's not 100 miles. Sorry. Sorry. Taylor Jones?
It's not 100 miles.
Okay. All right. So we'll put you in line with other people. We have Justin Newman, Travis McDonald, Travis. Where are you from, Tarp?
Hawaii and Washington.
Washington State doesn't count. No, we're going to be in line with other people. Sorry. Okay. So there was somebody who lived in 100. Medford. Medford.
Right there.
Pardon?
Right there.
Oh.
Tim. Yeah.
And
okay. And who was the other person?
Justin. Rigan.
Justin, come on up, Justin. Okay,
and
then
Madam
we'll take
Chair,
people.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'm here to testify from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yes.
Okay, we will. Come on up. There are three chairs.
Just that is. Just the individual right here.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask you to make your testimony short. We have about 25 minutes or less, so if you could make your testimony short, that would be great. Go ahead.
My name is Justin Newman. I'm the Vice President of Sales and Distribution for a Eugene and Springfield-based company called Emerald Vapors. We sell vaporizer-type products and solutions with and without nicotine. I'm here today to support House Bill 4073 on Andy Olson's side.
Okay.
Or, sorry, Representative Olson's side to ban the sale of liquids and vaporizers to children, to those under the age of 18.
Okay, all right.
We believe the other bills go too far. There's just not enough evidence to support their implementation, and believe that more time is needed for that research. So. We've also taken a proactive, I wanted to point this out, we've taken a proactive approach to the underage vaping by posting exterior signs as well as interior signs, implementing card verification in our stores, and educating the public. So we do believe it should be an adult decision and not available for children.
And if you have written materials, you're welcome to give it to staff, and we'll make sure it gets to everybody. It looks like you have some written materials.
You know, I do. It's it has quite a few notes. So.
Well, I'm gonna.
I don't know if you could
I have
read
so
my
many
handwriting.
People here. If you could just briefly summarize what your salient points are, that would be great.
Okay. Basically, we're here to help implement a policy that we've already proactively implemented ourselves, and we think that Representative Olson's bill does a good job of that, but the other bills go too far, and I don't think I can say it any better than that. So
that was great. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair,
and we need your name, please.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for listening to us today. I'd like to
give me your name, please. Your name.
I'm sorry. My name is Tim Churchill. I'm from Medford, and I'd like to applaud Mr. Olson, or Chairmember Olson, on the 4073 to keep that away from minors. I work for EC Blend Company, who is a manufacturer of the e-liquids, and we employ over 120 people there in Medford. This is a very fast-growing industry, mm-hmm. and you guys have a lot of work ahead of you, I'm sure, on deciding the right path to take. We support your focus on the welfare of the general public and for minors. However, we oppose the measure 4115 because it does restrict a lot of the retail stores from offering the product. The customer has to be able to try this product. It's an item-specific stores, most of the vape shops. It's not, if you want to go and learn about vaping or try the products, you really need to test them. And this would have a negative economic effect on sales, as at least 75% of those sales would come from the trials of the product. We would like to be defined as an exemption in this legislation, if at all possible, and we feel that there would be no excess exposure to the general public from vaping in the stores.
Do you understand what he's saying about an exception?
I do not.
Could you explain that to us?
From the standalone stores in the bill 4115, they were talking about not restricting vaping in the stores unless it was a standalone store.
Okay.
That seems to be a little
excessive. That's in current law regarding cigarettes. So, yeah, tobacco. Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, I am Dr. Joel Nitzkin. I am a public health physician from New Orleans, Louisiana. I've been active in tobacco control since the 1980s, and since 2007, very active in the arena of tobacco harm reduction, and after that, e-cigarettes. Most of the work I have done in this area I have done on behalf of the American Association of Public Health Physicians. But lacking the financial resources to travel to try to address these issues, I've had to seek additional outside support to make such testimony possible, and for that purpose I've established a relationship with the R Street Institute.
And what is that?
The R Street Institute is a Washington, D.C. libertarian think tank that is dedicated to free market solutions to problems. They are moderate in their views. They fully respect the role of government in regulating industry to protect health and protect the environment, but they're very concerned about cases and instances where the governmental agencies go well beyond the regulations needed to protect the health of the public. And in their mind, the e-cigarette issue appears to be one of those issues. And for that reason, they're supporting the work that I do and others in the public health community that share these views. Very briefly, I've prepared two handouts which should already have been distributed to the committee, one with my testimony today and the second in our street paper making the case for tobacco harm reduction. Very briefly, we fully support Bill 4073 restricting sales to minors because nicotine per se can be harmful to the adolescent brain and should be restricted. Not only do we encourage support of that bill, we would urge the legislature to up the age cutoff from 18 to 21 because this tendency to propensity to addiction probably lasts until age 25 or 26. And we can get a much bigger portion of it and get this out of the high schools by upping the age to age 21. With regard to the prohibition of e-cigarettes in no smoking areas, we think that that would be a damaging step to take from a public health perspective, and let me explain why. First of all, the studies have been completed. E-cigarette vapor as exhaled by the user does not contain any toxic chemical substances that are detectable above background levels in indoor environments. No, they are not. It's not pure water vapor. There are trace quantities of carcinogens there, but the quantities are exceedingly low. The reason for the
sum up.
Pardon?
I'm going to ask you to sum up your testimony. I know we have printed materials, and we will look through that, but we have a lot of people here who are wanting to testify.
Let me tell you why I'm here and why I've dedicated my energy to this. The government, the federal agencies talk about 480,000 deaths a year due to tobacco products in the United States. All of those deaths are due to a single product, the combustible cigarette. There are not enough deaths from all other tobacco products combined for the federal agencies to track. Since 2004, the numbers of smokers in the United States and the numbers of deaths by the best CDC estimates have been stable. Tobacco harm reduction, which means simply informing smokers that they could reduce their risk of potentially fatal cancer, heart, and lung disease by 98% or better, is the only feasible policy option we have for reducing the number of smokers in the United States and reducing those deaths. 4115 is basically intended to communicate the idea that the e-cigarettes are as harmful as cigarettes, because in the tobacco control world, the mantra has always been a tobacco-free society.
Dr. Nitschen, I'm going to give you 30 seconds.
Okay. If they would simply change that mantra to a smoke-free society, they would be in line with the best of science. I would welcome the opportunity to meet with those who are supportive of 4115, urge them to review the material and my handouts.
Thank you, Dr. Nitschen. I really appreciate
urge deferral on this issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're suspending this just for a minute because we're doing a work session on hospital 4038.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 438, which was carried over from Monday, we have received no fiscal impact statement. So there's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the dash of the amendment, and the committee would be able to
send it to the floor, right?
So, great. That's correct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 4038.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 2/4/14 to the House Bill 4038. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Representative.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4038 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 4038 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative
Gallego? Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Representative Whitsett?
Aye. Excused.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. Passes. So, Representative Wisnett, would you co-carry this?
I think since our work of Representative Knight this summer, it was her bill originally, 3007. So
okay, terrific. So thank you for all the work you've done. Thank you so much. Good job. Good job. Okay, we have another work session.
No displays.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4028 is also ready for so inclined. That measure was waiting for a revenue statement. One has come in as indeterminate on the dash one.
And so it doesn't need to go to Ways and Means, right?
That's correct, and we have all permission right. Not to send it there.
I'm going to open up the work session on House Bill 4028. Representative?
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 4028.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 2/4/14. Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4028 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that as a subsequent referral to the committee on Ways and Means.
Be rescinded.
To be rescinded.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 4028 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion? Any objection? We've got to call that roll.
Representative Gallego?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Whitman?
Aye.
Representative Whitsett?
Excused.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. This bill passes. Thank you so much, committee.
Can we recount that?
Great.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. All right. Now we open up the hearing on House Bills 4073 and 4015. Oh, Representative Kennemer and I will carry that bill together. Thank you. Okay. So now we're going back. Actually, I'm going to call everybody who lives more than 100 miles away, right? So I'm going to call up Bill Cross, and he's left, but he will be back, I think. No? Bill Cross has a statement. We'll call him at a later time. So we're going to hear from Karen Gerard. Karen? Karen. You guys are excused.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yes. Oh, I see. Okay. So we have Timothy Schultz, Travis Brisbane, Sean Bowers, and next we'll have those three people here, please. Next we will have Sam Tung. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
In the hot studio.
Ami Devon? Devereaux? Devereaux. Terrific. She'll be next. And Robert Ward. Okay, if you could just state what you're here to say to us very quickly so everybody will have a chance to speak, I'd appreciate it. And state your name, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Timothy Schultz. I'm here as a couple of hats. First off, I'm a user of tobacco, electronic cigarettes.
Okay.
I was a smoker for 25 years. For the last 5 or 10 of that, a pack and a half to 2 packs a day. Over a year ago, I quit smoking due to using vaping products. I have noticed my health improve significantly as a result of that. I know some of the science is up for question, but I know what it's done for me. I don't hack, I don't wheeze, I smell better, I taste better, and all, it totally enriched my life. I know I'd have family members that have died as a result of tobacco that would be alive today if these products were available back then. I'm also here as a hat as a shop manager. I manage a shop in Portland that sells these products. I can tell you that I think the emergency measure is a little extreme. Every shop that I know of in this state already restricts the sales of these products to anyone who's an adult. I know in my shop and every shop in Portland, we card on entry. We absolutely will not sell to any minors. We don't encourage that at all. I also feel that some of the wording in 4115, if it were to be enacted, I'm against it. But I also feel that some of the wording on restricting shops or sampling in shops, except ones that are tobacco certified, right now there aren't any shops that would even qualify under that certification, mainly because of their standalone building. And to enact that and then say that the tobacco shops are allowed to sample, where somebody is going to then be forced to be in that tobacco environment when they're trying to save themselves from being around tobacco, is totally unfair.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're
for
welcome.
Coming to testify. I appreciate that.
My name is Sean Bowers. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I am a vaping product user. I've used e-cigarettes over the last couple of years, but I've found a great deal of difficulty in successfully switching to the e-cigarette and away from the cigarette until I realized that there were such things as stores that offered sampling and an environment that was welcoming to the use of e-cigarettes and vaporizers. I was stuck using those little e-cigarettes that you found at 7-Eleven, which I never liked, but then I found that there were flavors and there was a community of people in support of each other quitting smoking, in support of the hobby that's found here, and there were places in which we could go that we could test flavors, in which we could build community and support each other in trying to get away from cigarettes. I know in the last 2 months that I've been completely cigarette free, I've already begun to taste again. I've already been able to breathe. I can breathe a lot better. I can taste. I can smell. I can exert myself without gasping, without fainting. I'm actually able to work for long periods of time, to whereas before I could not do any exerted physical activity.
Thank you so much for coming to
Thank
testify.
You.
Hi, my name is Travis Brisbane, and just want to say that I'm proof that these work. I was a smoker for 16 years. I started when I was 12 and recently quit. Been smoke-free for about a year. And I fully support Vice Chair Olson's 4073. I do not believe that minors should have access to these products. However, the 4115 restricting the use in the shops and at our vape meets where we get together and talk about these products and new things, restricting that will be, in my opinion, detrimental to a lot of the success that comes with using electronic cigarettes. You were talking earlier about gambling addiction and having programs for people to quit. Well, these vape shops and our meetings with each other, that's our program to stay off of tobacco cigarettes. And if you take that away, I don't know. The health issues will definitely take a blow.
Thank you so much for coming to testify. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I called up several other people.
Thank you. I just had surgery. Sorry.
Thank you for coming.
Much to me to be here.
Thank you. That would trump 100 miles.
I just had spinal cord surgery for the third time due to an injury not smoking related. My name's Tommy Devereaux Earl. I am also a registered nurse and have been for more than a decade. I worked in ER and trauma and firsthand repeatedly have seen the effects of smoking. I've held family members when they've grieved through the loss of someone dying of COPD who in the waiting room, you know, was wanting to smoke a cigarette, or the patient that begs you to come down to smoke a cigarette. And in that, I was also smoking. I thought I was a closet smoker. Now I know there's not such thing. Let me tell you, I've vaped for 5 years. Longer than most here. I searched and searched and searched for something and finally found something, and it works. I remember, you know, having a code, a respiratory code, and then I'd be on break and I'd go out to my car and try to suck down 5 cigarettes, even though I just watched someone die. I couldn't get through that. Finally, I found this, and then through social media, which I do, I have over 400 Twitter followers and 5,000 Facebook followers, and I did a lot to organize the group that's here today because we have a fellowship, and that fellowship is through vaping. If you limit how we are able to get together, I will tell you, I have a vape meet in Hillsboro. We meet at Coyote's once a month in the banquet room. And last meeting, I had 75 vapers. That is 75 people not smoking. And more come, people come in, people come out. I can explain it to you. I mean, the research we do have research, actually. The Burston papers, I don't know if anybody has mentioned those. Let me pull it up. Sorry.
Would you send that to us, please?
I will send it.
That would be great, because we have so many people here to testify.
I will send that. But
that would be great.
Let me just say, this is a grassroots movement. This is not big tobacco. This is not big farm. We have a movement that started with the people, and we designed a way to get off of cigarettes ourselves. This is my personal nicotine device. I made it cute. I'm a girl, and I like it that way. It's not appealing to a teenager. I also make my own liquid, and I have written an ebook on how to make it, and I have for years helped people learn how to make their own. We know what is in it. There is the Burston papers. Igor Burston, the Drexel University School of Public Health, did a study based on over 9,000 observations of e-liquid and vapor and found no apparent concern for bystanders exposed to e-cig vapor, even under the worst conditions.
And I'd appreciate it if you would send that to us.
I will.
Appreciate that. Okay.
This is my device.
Okay.
There is a battery and a coil that I make and wick, which could be a cotton. I disseminated through the group that we would like to be respectful and not vape. So I will not vape here for you. But a 1 second demonstration, I will just show you that it is just vapor.
I've seen that.
We did also
that you've got to
talk
that turn
with
it off.
The state troopers out front while we were vaping, and they were actually very interested and nice to us and wanted to see what we were doing. All it takes is an explanation.
Thank you so much for coming, especially in your condition. We really appreciate it.
I would like to be available if you ever have any further questions or work from a citizen in the committee, please.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Committee. My name is Sam Tung. I work at Fat Boy Vapors in Gresham, and I have a webcast internet show called Full Frontal Nerdity, where we talk about vaping culture. I'm also quite terrified to be here. I've never been in a situation like this, so please excuse me.
You're doing great.
4073, I fully support. This is not something I want to sell to kids. I don't think that vaping should be geared towards children, and I don't think it is currently. People say because of the flavors that are produced that it's meant for children, but I like cake. And as I recall, there's a kind of Smirnoff, which is a vodka brand, that is cake. And liquor doesn't get talked to about advertising to children as much as e-cigarettes have currently. Sampling the product is how I get people to stop smoking. My mother is dying. She's dying of cancer. And, pardon me, she won't switch. And I know for a fact, I've talked to the doctors around her, that she would feel better and breathe easier if she would. But her addiction has been so ongoing that it will not be something she can get away from. I couldn't get her started on this. And if you restrict the ability of other people to get their family and their friends to stop smoking cigarettes, which are proven to kill you, and to start vaping, which is proven to not kill you, the health detriment is going to be incredible. We're dealing major blows to tobacco just by doing this, and I want to keep dealing blows. I want tobacco gone. I want tobacco out of my system, and I want it out of everyone else's system as well. Thank you, clapping guy.
Thank you so much, and thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just want to say one more thing really fast. Nicotine is not only derived from tobacco. It is derived, we use it, a pharmaceutical-grade nicotine that is derived from many sources.
And if you could send that to us, that would be really
including
helpful.
Including tomatoes, bell peppers, that all of those contain nicotine as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Adele Adams, I think.
I don't know how many guys.
Is Adele here? And Sarah?
Oh, my right arm.
I was 100 miles away. Can I get up with Travis McDonald?
Yeah, after these after two women. Two. Right. Sarah, where were you from? Hawaii?
Well, my business is in Washington, but
Washington. Hawaii. Okay. All right. Okay. You can be next. Okay, and if you could just state your name and just start right on talking. My committee is being great to stay here. I appreciate it.
So, Chair Tamayo and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Bill 4115. My name is Adele Adams, and I'm here representing Multnomah County, working in the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program with Multnomah County Health Department. I want to express the county's deep concern about the vapor products, which are currently in use in our communities. These products are being packaged, advertised, and marketed particularly to youth. Yet these products are not regulated. There's little research on the long-term effects of health. For that reason, Multnomah County supports House Bill 4115 to help protect the youth from accessing these products. We appreciate legislators' determination to ban the sale of e-cigarettes to minors, and so we strongly support House Bill 4115 because it requires e-cigarettes to be included in the Indoor Clean Air Act, and we believe that that's a critical piece. Without that inclusion, we're creating an environment where vaping is considered an acceptable behavior and could become a normative culture for youth. Here's what we do know, and I won't repeat quite a bit of this because it's been talked about quite a bit today as far as the different studies that have been
very
done
quickly.
And the carcinogenic toxins that are in it. So I won't go into that as much. But current smoking rates are down in Oregon from 57% among our 11th graders and 74% among our 8th graders since 1996. Yet the use of e-cigarettes by teens and adults is on the rise, and potentially creating addictions to nicotine among our youth, deepening the addiction for current smokers and renewing the addiction for former smokers. Again, talking about how these rates have doubled in the year of 2011 to 2012 in our youth. E-cigarettes are advertised in child-friendly flavors such as strawberry, chocolate, cotton candy, and mint, and in packaging that are smaller in size and appeal to young people. We deeply are concerned about this product as being a genie in a bottle. The bill will help protect our youth, including e-cigarettes, and the Indoor Clean Air Act will help create an environment that discourages their use.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
And if you have written material, we'll make sure people get it.
A quick question.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. I want to be sure I understand. Are you talking on behalf of Multnomah County through some
correct.
Action by the commissioners?
Correct. They're correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Tomei, Vice Chairs Olson and Gomberg, and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Hartstein, and I am from the Benton County Health Department. I am here to testify on behalf of the Coalition of Local Health Officials, the Association of Oregon Counties, and the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs in support of House Bill 4115 with the -5 amendments. Electronic smoking devices, or e-cigarettes, are understudied and unregulated, as you've heard. Smokeless at this time does not necessarily mean that they are harmless. The actual nicotine and chemical content of e-cigarettes does not always match the label, as you've heard today. The FDA analyzed samples of e-cigarettes and found that they contained nicotine, even though they were labeled as nicotine-free. And that goes for different levels of nicotine as well. Some that were marked as high were actually low in content. Some that were marked as low were actually higher. The FDA also found that samples of e-cigarettes contain chemicals known to cause cancer and birth defects in the vapor. I want to also add that e-cigarettes have also been used as a device for other drugs. For example, hash oil is now commercially available for use in e-cigarettes in Washington and Colorado. It's no surprise that the use of e-cigarettes by youth is on the rise. E-cigarettes are advertised in candy and fruit flavors that you've heard about today, and they lack the legal age requirement that we're trying to address. Adele mentioned that youth rates have doubled, and I will also mention that 1 in 5 youth that are e-cigarette users are not conventional tobacco users. So that means that there's a possibility that they are creating a new addiction. And if you remember, 90% of smokers began their nicotine addiction before leaving their teens. So the issue is really about nicotine initiation.
If you could sum it up.
Sure.
And you'll give us written material and be fine.
Yes. House Bill 4115, as amended, would prohibit the sale of electronic smoking devices to minors and solution with any content, not just nicotine content, and prohibit use of electronic smoking devices indoors, no matter what the content. The Coalition of Local Health Officials, the Association of Oregon Counties, and the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Program urge you to support this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. Come on, is Caleb Hayes still here? And David Glenn, Brennan Venturi. Yeah, if you'd wait just a minute after this group, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Travis McDonald. Thank you, Madam Chair and the representatives. I am a resident of Hawaii. I'm representing Hawaiian Vapors. The reason I'm here is I actually called some of these guys to come talk to me about wholesaling, and they told me about this. I got my car and I drove here. Because it is like...
Hawaii?
What's that?
From Hawaii?
No, from Washington. Because I live there. Yeah, it's great. It's Back to the Future and everything. Vapor approved. But, you know, by hearing her story, it is a tight community. You know, I smoked cigarettes from the time I was 11 to and I'm 34. I quit 6 months ago because my sister came to me and said, try this, you quit smoking, and I laughed at her. And I haven't smoked since. Now, the question of if you're driving and does it look like a cigarette, well, does that look like a cigarette to you? You know what I mean? Hey, I'm smoking a cigarette. No. But at the same time, I could say, like, the ones from the gas station, yeah, they might look like a cigarette, and then it would be harder for a cop or what have you. You know, the whole point of me being here is, you know, to sell to minors? No. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. But the reason that they say, oh, strawberry, this flavor, that flavor, because kids grow to be adults. Everybody loves those flavors. You know what I mean? How can you say, oh, well, kids are going to like it? Well, you were a kid once. Of course, you still like strawberry. Why does that dictate the difference between, you know, if you can vape it? Smoking cigarettes has 4,000 carcinogens tar. I'm not going to go into any of those numbers. You have all that information. I'm just giving you a testimony of that. This saved my life. Both my dads, my stepdad and my dad, died from cancer. You know, they would be alive today. And this was just 3.5 years ago. But I didn't know about it. And guess what I did after they died? I smoked a cigarette. So I put myself in that same situation. And now every single day when I give someone this, whether they're 21 or 18, you know, because they got to be 18, right? So 18, or they're 70 years old, I feel that I'm helping those people every single time. And when their kids bring their mothers and their fathers in, you know, I'm helping those people every single time. I've sold advertising. I've sold all these things that maybe helps businesses do that. But now I help people every single day. And if you take that away from these people, what do you think they're going to do? Go back to smoking cigarettes. You know, and it's not better for them. So thank you for letting
me
talk.
Thank you for coming. You bet. Thank you for coming. Caleb?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Caleb Hayes. I'm here on behalf of NASW, the National Association of Social Workers, and our 1,800 members right here in Oregon. Here to testify in support of both bills at hand with a preference for 4115. I think it's been made clear by almost everyone in the room that we should ban the sale of these items to minors. Obviously, we agree with that. Additionally, we'd like to see these concepts go a little bit further, and, you know, at the risk of going a little bit into the weeds, you know, we would love to see a tax on these. And a tax...
Not in this bill, please.
Recognize. We would like to
see... Stop by your head.
With that being said, you know, we support Representative Barnhart's concept mainly because, you know, I think it's clear to everyone now that we took too long to ban smoking cigarettes inside. That I think there's a lot of science behind that. Why take that risk again with these products? Why don't we make sure that it's actually safe before we go ahead and let that happen?
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
I'm not with this guy.
I gathered that.
My name is David Glenn. I'm the owner of Fat Boy Vapors in Gresham, Oregon. I was a smoker for 20 years. My whole naval career was one cigarette break after another, I think, and that kind of summed up my whole career sometimes. I was nearly 2 packs a day for the last 10 years that I smoked. My brother bought me this little cigarette-looking thing. It didn't work for me. He said it was vapor at the time. It didn't work. So he took me to a vapor shop up in Lakewood, Washington, called the Vaporium, where I got to sample and try flavors. There were people there who could show me how it worked. I didn't buy a pack of cigarettes after that. I never bought one. 20 years of smoking, I've tried every device to try to quit smoking. I've tried the patch. I've tried Chantix. It put me in the hospital while I was on active duty. It messed me up. This worked. As for how well my lungs are now, they're still healing. A lot of damage was done from smoking, but I can breathe better than I used to. I really believe in what it's doing. When I got out of the Navy, I started going to college. I couldn't smoke on the campus, so there was a whole parade of people that would go off campus to get their cigarette. So I joined them and started talking about vapor with them because it worked for me. And I converted a lot of those guys to vapors, and they don't smoke now. And I was going to school for business, so I started a business. And I truly believe I'm saving lives. It saved my life. It saved some of my family members' lives. And the restriction that 4115 can put on retail stores, being able to provide that service and helping people understand what it can do for them, it does require the sampling to get that sensation of this really could work. The underage thing, we card people. Yeah, Representative Olson, his bill prevents that. I think that's great. But 4115, it goes way too far, and it there's so much more research that's needed, and that's really all I got to say. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all for coming to testify. So who have I forgotten here? Sean, is it Bowers? Have I called you yet? Oh, I called you, sir. Come on up. Robert Ward, is he here? Brennan Venturi?
Yes.
Is that you?
Yes.
Okay, you probably signed on both.
I did.
Dalton Barstad? Did I already call you? Okay, terrific. Okay. Tyler Dean? Okay, great.
In the interest of brevity, I'm going to allow someone else to
go. Okie doke, go ahead. Is there anybody who signed? Oh, I've got Michael Allen Jones.
What about Taylor Jones?
Pardon?
Taylor Jones.
Taylor Jones, yeah. Go ahead. Come on. Michael Allen Jones? Do I have a Michael Allen Jones? Is there anybody who signed up that I haven't called yet? It's confusing. Okay. All right. Two more. One, two, three. Okay. All right. All right. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Brennan Venturi. I'm the owner of an electronic cigarette lounge in Portland, Oregon. Also one down in Springfield, Oregon. And I'm here today to be in favor of 4073. I think that we already have signs posted on our door, say 18 plus only. We don't allow anyone under the age of 18 in on the premises. We don't believe.
But what would be helpful is if you've already heard this testimony, say I agree with that. We don't need to hear it again because it sounds like there will be a lot of people who own the shops and you're carding people under 18, right? So that would be great. But if you've got something else new that you'd like us to know, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I do. I'd like to speak on the part of the Clean Air Act.
And that would be 4115, right?
Correct, 4115.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm citing a study on behalf of the Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco, published by Oxford University. I'm just going to give you the conclusions. I won't.
That would be great. And you can send that to us and we'll put it
of
in our
course,
files
yeah.
and look at it. That would be great.
The conclusion is using an electronic cigarette in indoor environments has 10% less harm, less nicotine content in it than conventional cigarettes. Also, if you've ever been around it, obviously there's a massive difference in the odor and just the effect. That's pretty much all I have on 4115.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
My name is Dalton Barstad, Vape Game co-owner and Springfield store operator. Much like other stores, you know, we already card everyone that looks under the age of 25. Only sell to 18 years or older. But on the topic of HB 115, I have to disagree because it feels preemptive. It's not following all the evidence that's been gathered and will put undue restrictions on our trade, customers, shipping modes, and the industry as a whole. I have a problem saying that electronic cigarettes or personal vaporizers should be deemed the same as cigarettes, especially since there have been several things positive from these, and only the unconfirmed negatives have been focused on. In the short term, there are more relevant studies about to be published that would help us, and we need a chance to create a better organized and appropriate regulation. Not to mention the damage it would do to risking pay cuts and job losses for I have 12 employees at my shop, Portland and Eugene included. You know, the other stores, you know, other stores, staff around me, or the outlying industries that support us, and as well as the $1 billion subsection of our economy that this has become. So,
thank you. Thank you for coming to testify. I appreciate that. Go ahead.
My name's Taylor Jones. I have 2 points to make, and I'll make them as brief as I can. I'm a molecular biologist trained at the University of Oregon. I have a couple years of lab experience in research setting. So I'm vetted in reading scientific literature. I've read a lot of the studies. The studies that listed, even the FDA study that lists, we've tested Sigalikes. We've tested the cigarettes, the e-cigarettes that look like cigarettes. That's what they tested. And they tested an older style of e-liquid, a liquid that was manufactured in old premises. It had diethylene glycol and it had impure nicotine that had the nitrosamines, the whole tobacco alkaloid still in it. That's no longer acceptable industry practices. American E-Liquid Manufacturers Standards Association has set up a framework for what is acceptable and what's not acceptable in e-liquid manufacture. None of the diacetyl, the diethylene glycol, the purity of nicotine has to be so pure that it doesn't have the nitrosamines in it. So these things have been set up so that the secondhand vapor and the vapor is not as dangerous as even the light amount of dangerousness that was found in some of these older studies. Now, the second point I want to make is that House Bill 4115, restricts shops in such a way that it would force the consumer that wants to stay off of cigarettes and wants to continue using cigarettes to purchase e-liquid, first of all, from other states at the best-case scenario, where our Oregon money would go to out of state, and second of all, more likely is that they would be purchasing inferior products that would be made in China with inferior levels of inferior quality propylene glycol, inferior quality vegetable glycerin, inferior quality nicotine, which would be a dire detriment to the vaping society as a whole and the health of Oregonians as a whole. So, you know, I'm a father. I don't want my kids to get a hold of this stuff until it's a face-to-face adult decision that they can make. You know, I don't want that. I'm totally in support of Olson's, Representative Olson's bill. But the House Bill 4115 has gone way too far, and the impacts haven't been outlined by the writer.
If you have scientific information that you're citing,
I will send you a list of links. Yeah.
Thank you.
A quick question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Is this product regulated at all by FDA? Is there anyone that knows what's going in, actually?
Not yet, but there are a bunch of manufacturers, including me. I'm the lab manager at Vape Game.
Mm-hmm. You're lab manager?
I'm the lab manager at Vape Game.
Vape Game.
It's the same company. It's in Springfield, Oregon. It's the same company that these gentlemen own. We go by AIMSA standards. So there are lots of manufacturers that, and when you follow AIMSA standards, you have to list which fluids that you may or may not carry that do and do not follow AIMSA standards. The AIMSA certification process is a lengthy process. We're in the midst of it, but we meet these requirements.
And is anyone checking to make sure that
AIMSA, to be a member of AIMSA,
they can do like spot checking.
They do random spot checking.
How do you spell that?
AEMSA.org. It's American E-Liquid Manufacturers Standards Association.
And you will send that to us. So
yes,
we
ma'am.
Can check also that. I'm sorry. Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
And so there were some people who signed up and who haven't had a chance to speak yet. Come on up, sir, and tell me your name.
My name's Paul Bates.
Paul Bates, and you did sign up? There you are. And Sean McDonald, come on up. And Robert Ward? What is your name, sir, back there?
Michael Johns. You called me about...
Come on up, Michael Johns. Johns or Jones?
Jones.
Jones, got it, Michael.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my name is Paul Bates. That actually sounds right. Here today to both support 4073 and oppose 4115. There's been a lot of evidence given here in various levels of elegance and eloquence. I'd like to say that I am current owner of Division Vapor in Portland, Oregon. I had been a smoker for 25 years, seriously trying to quit for the last 10, and e-cigarettes are the only method I have found in all those years of trying to quitting that actually worked. I'm going to go beyond that a little bit right now. You've heard the evidence. We are hearing from tons of people thinking that vaping saved their life. Vaping saved your life, right?
Yep.
Amen. Saved your life.
Okay, could you also put up your hands people who own businesses, the businesses that sell these? Great, thank you very much.
Okay. I'd like to say that 4115 misses the point. In attempting to lump electronic cigarettes in with smoking, completely misses the point of what it does. It is a different process. So completely different that you need proper background studies and everything else to build your own law rather than tacking it on to something that was a smoking law. Smoking is burning plant material. You light it on fire, it produces smoke, which is absolutely a different process than vaporization. You know, smoke will set off your smoke alarm in your kitchen. You start burning something on a pan, smoke. You boil water, you do not set off your smoke alarms. It is a different, completely different substance.
Paul, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
Everybody has stayed here a very long time.
I'd just like to make that point should be entirely clear to almost anybody who studies this subject.
Great. And
that trying to lump
the two together
is a big mistake.
Your point and give it to staff, then we'll make sure everybody gets it.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean McDonald. And I began smoking in college, and only after a year of smoking, it had terrible effects on my body, and I knew I needed to quit. So I set a goal to quit before I graduated from college, and I was successful. It took a long time, and I kept kind of procrastinating on quitting. I tried cold turkey, the patch, and I figured, you know what, I had a buddy who had an electronic cigarette, and I tried it. And that was what worked. Now 11 months smoke-free. And recently, I had my fiancée try it, and she wasn't too pleased. It wasn't until she was able to go into a store and find the right liquid for her at the right nicotine strength that really did it.
Had she been a smoker before this?
Yeah, I smoked for about a year.
But
she
your fiancée?
About 10 years now.
Okay.
At about 30 cigarettes a day, which has now dropped to one or two. And I'm hoping soon that number is going to be zero.
We wish her good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. Michael Jones, Rockin' Vape in Albany. And I just wanted to share a little story with you guys. This reminds me a lot of why we started this business. I have first-time customers that crumble their packs of cigarettes into the trash. You know, I have seen first-time customers tell me their very own testimony, just like we have here. Some tell me this was their last chance. You know, some tell me they have tried Chantix and still have nightmares from the FDA. You know, I still have, you know, customers that have actually just cried right on the spot after you get it. And I understand if you're not a smoker and you've never been addicted to this, you're not going to get it. And I get that. You know, I get that. But if you have and you've tried everything, because I guarantee you most of the businesses that have gone into this, this is passion. This is straight passion, and that's nothing more, nothing less of it. But we love what this product did for us and how we get to go and quit tobacco. We are not tobacco. There is no, we are not tobacco. Am I right, guys?
Right.
Okay. And I think if we want to take something away from this, we're not big tobacco. We don't support it. And the little guys, the little e-cigs that you see in the shops, you know, we're the residuals from that. Not them. They didn't create this. We did. And I think when we look back, you know, we want it to be known that it wasn't them that got us here. It was us. This is about us saving us, you know. And all we want is a better life for ourselves. So, you know, I thank you guys for staying late with us. And I'm definitely in support of 4073. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Okay. There's some people I still haven't called. Did I call Justin Newman? Okay, so he's off. Edward Wiggins? Is that you, sir? Okay, come on up. Sure. Oh, and Jane Clark, is that you? Okay. So have I called Sean Bowers? Did I call him already? And Robert Ward? Okay.
I'll be speaking.
Thank you again, committee, for saying. Oh, and oh, Tommy. You were Tommy, right? Yeah. Terrific. Okay, dear. Okay. And Robert Ward. Okay.
Me?
All right, because people signed up for both bills, and so I'm just trying to coordinate here. So go ahead.
Hey, my name's, for the record, my name's Edward Wiggins. Thank you, Madam Chair, and everybody else. I'm a new owner of Newburgh Vapors in Newburgh, Oregon here. I came across Jacob over here. He turned me on to electronic cigarettes, and I quit smoking cigars. I quit smoking cigarettes and went to cigars, mm-hmm. and then now I'm done. I pulled money out of my retirement. That's how passionate I am on this. My wife's quit smoking everything. My main point is I went from 20 milligrams of nicotine. I'm now down to 8 in 1 month's time. And my goal as a business owner is to pass that on to everybody else so they don't have to have either one. It's about getting everybody off the tobacco, onto the pen, and then throw it away. That's what I want. I want to lose customers that it can go through the process.
Good question. So I'm just going to ask briefly, has anybody done that who went from cigarettes to vaping and then off completely?
He has 4 customers that have done it.
Okay,
I have
good.
Actually more than 4 customers. I have multiple customers okay. that have come and testified that they quit totally.
Good. Thank
zero.
You. Okay, go ahead.
That was my whole point.
All right, thank you.
I think most of these people back here, that's where the different nicotine levels come in, and it get people off and done. And so I support 4078, but we need to be able to have our shops where we can gather.
Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead.
My name is Firas Jacob, and I'm the owner of Elite Smoke Station.
Owner of what? The owner of
a smoke station?
Elite.
Yeah, no cigarettes.
Elite. Thank you.
I have been selling electronic cigarettes for over 6 months now in Salem, Oregon, and I got to meet a lot of people that were smokers, quit smoking, switched to vaporizers, and some of them are not even vaporizing anymore. So I think that's a great point. That they started with something, switched to something else, and then now they're doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you limit their ability to vaporize outside, which there isn't enough research about the product that it says anything bad about it for people who are around vaporizers, I think you're just going to steal the opportunity from them to become those people that quit everything.
Okay. So, thank you for coming to testify. Appreciate that.
I support the bill, by the way, that
represents Olson's bill.
Yes.
Got it.
We all do.
Okay.
I'm going to make this really quick. My name is Jane Clark, and I've never done this in my life, and I'm shaking in my boots.
You're doing great, Jane. Okay, I think you called and talked to my staff, didn't you? Yeah, good.
So I'm 53 years old. I smoked for almost 33 years. I have 5 grandkids and 3 children of my own. I do not smoke cigarettes anymore, thanks to the vapor.
I don't own a business. I'm just a customer.
Where do you live, Jane? You're doing great, honey. You're our last one. We've got all 9.
Okay, thank you.
You're doing
I live in Amity. Actually, it's a little community called Balls, outside of Amity.
Amity, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know where Amity
yes,
is.
Yes, I work. Am I allowed to say where I work? If I shouldn't,
sure.
I? Nope. I work for Nordstrom.
Good.
I've been there 5.5 years. And the last thing I'd like to say is thank you for allowing me to try these in public. I'm down to 16 or 14 milligrams, and I mean, I never dreamt that I'd ever quit smoking. I smoked a lot for a long time, and the FDA does not require the things that I sell, skincare-wise, to be tested either. Just saying.
Mm,
I never came with that intent. and I didn't know that this was going to be here today. I heard about it, and I asked if I could leave work early, and they let me.
Good.
That's all I'd like to say, and thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for coming. Great job. So, anybody who has not had a chance to testify who would like to, come on up very quickly. Anybody else? This is our last person. So what is your name, sir?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My name is Thaddeus Marney. I'm actually the former...
That again?
Thaddeus Marney.
I love that name.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Don't you can tell it's late in the day.
I'm actually the former board member of an organization called the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association. We actually promote the education on tobacco harm reduction. Very familiar with Joel Niskin. Glad to see him here today. And I strongly encourage you to pay very close attention to what he had to share today. I wanted to... everybody here did such a great job. I don't want to recap too much, but I wanted to bring up a couple of things that haven't been brought up. Specifically with 4115, because of... Excuse me, I'm fighting up a little bit of cold myself, but I'm new to the whole process of politics and get nervous. But because 4115 does not specify nicotine products in its inclusion of smoking products, it would actually also include the use of e-cigarettes for cannabis under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, as well as the likelihood of upcoming legalization. And it's important to note that we have millions of deathly ill medical marijuana patients in this state that need to have access to their medicine without having to smoke it. And if 4115 was passed, they would not only they would actually have to basically return to smoking in many cases, or not be able to use these smoke-free alternatives in places where they're not able to or to smoke because of the wide variety of places where smoking is prohibited by the Oregon Clean Air Act. So I think it's very important to keep that very much in mind, that this not only affects those of us who are trying to get away from the harms of tobacco smoking, but also cannabis patients who are trying to get away from the harms of smoking anything. The real bottom line, and I really want to echo what the previous statement said, is the difference between fire, flame, burning, and smoking. That's when you light something on fire, that's what creates the ash, that's what creates the carbon monoxide, that's what creates the tar, that's what creates the smoke, and that's also what creates the fire hazards. That's another issue you don't hear brought up very often. You're not going to light... E-cigarettes prevent forest fires.
I love it.
You're not going
to... Okay, Thaddeus, thank you.
Thank you very much.
One question about the marijuana?
Yes, of course. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Question.
No, I just wondered, does that mean that currently... medical marijuana users can either smoke or vape marijuana in restaurants, all of the buildings that prohibit it from tobacco right now?
It's possible. You can use a vaporizer anywhere. It's not included in the Oregon Smoking Clean Air Act, but using vaporized products allows them to use them without an effect on bystanders. Recent studies, and I can forward them to the committee, is showing that vaporizing drastically reduces any toxins, definitely to the user, but to bystanders, to millions of levels times below what could possibly have any effect on bystanders.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about secondhand smoke.
Oh, and
vaping marijuana and secondhand smoke is like... Okay, you just raised another issue.
It drastically reduces that because it's vaporized. When you burn some, when you light something on fire, you're actually producing particulate matter that's actually floating in the air, and so it's spreading around. When you're vaporizing it, it's just a tiny, tiny amount. A heavy user uses less than a teaspoon a day of liquid.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there's just not much to be spread.
You're welcome to send something in writing.
I will.
That's great. Thank you so much. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for extending this hearing for nearly an hour. I mean, I've been in this room since 1 o'clock this afternoon, but I learned a lot in the last 2 hours, and I appreciate that very much. I also wanted to say I'm really gratified to hear stories from people who testified today that this new device has helped them get away from tobacco. That's very positive news as well. I have a question that I want to share with the group, and I encourage them to answer my question in writing, and I'll put that material into our public record as well. And the question is this. We've heard from a lot of people that are recovering smokers, tobacco smokers. And they were certainly familiar with the current restrictions on tobacco smoking, and they're essentially arguing that those restrictions should not apply to e-cigarettes as they do to tobacco cigarettes. And some people addressed that rather directly, but most people just simply said the bill goes too far. I'd like to understand better the difference between tobacco smoking in public and e-cigarette smoking in public. And part of the context for that is that we had a very brief demonstration of vaping here, very brief. And I'll just say for the record that from here 10 feet away, that we could discern the
flavoring.
And it was very, very brief, but I think from 10 feet away, my colleagues would agree we could smell it from here. And I'd just like to understand better the context of public cigarette smoking and public e-cigarette smoking. So write to me, send me an email, I will put it into the committee record.
Thank you, Representative. And I know, I'm sorry, Ben. Representative Barnhart, is he still here?
It's right in front of you.
Oh, we've brought him here. Get new glasses, Representative. Okay.
Thank you. Madam Chair, again, Phil Barnhart, State Representative, House District 11. I've sat through this hearing. I have learned some things today that I did not know. I want the committee to understand that I prepared four different amendments having to do with demonstrations of products. The one that I presented to you earlier, the Dash 1 Amendment, simply doesn't allow the demonstration of products. I have heard today from people who are vehement about getting off of tobacco, and they see this as a mean, they see vaping as a means of accomplishing that. And they point out, and I think fairly persuasively, that in order to get people who are chronic tobacco users to try something that may help, they claim it does, I have no evidence one way or the other, that they would like to be able to demonstrate the use of these products to the people who come into their vape shops. I have prepared a Dash 3 amendment, which I think I shared with the chair. I'm not certain.
It's on the list.
I prepared a Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment does all the things the Dash 1 amendment does, except in line 18 and 19, the Dash 3 amendment says vaping is permitted in a shop that exclusively sells vapor products. Now, when I first prepared this, I thought this was very impractical because I thought, obviously erroneously, that people who were interested in demonstrations would want to demonstrate tobacco and cigars and cigarettes and a variety of other things and vapor products in the same place. What we've heard today from the people who said that my bill goes too far is that they're not interested in tobacco products. They want to get off of tobacco products, and they see that being able to demonstrate the use of their vapor products in their shops as a positive thing to help other people do that. Given the situation that we're in, I am perfectly willing for the committee to experiment with this issue, to take them at their word, to adopt the Dash 3 amendment instead of the Dash 1 that I earlier proposed, because I'm convinced that at least the people who came to testify here who own vape shops are sincere in wanting to help people get off of tobacco. Now, I think it's really important for the committee to recognize that nobody in the testimony you've heard has suggested that it's okay for kids to use these products. Nobody has suggested that that was okay. That suggests to me that despite all the other protestations that people have, that there's a danger, perceived at least, in the use of vapor products. Otherwise, why would we care if kids used them? That leads me to the firm belief that we need to restrict the use of vapor products in public in the same way that we restrict the use of cigarettes in public. The issue that has been raised over and over again today isn't really about that issue. It's about the issue of converting people who are already addicted to tobacco products to something that is less harmful to them. I'm willing to go there, and that's why I propose that the committee consider the Dash 3 amendment. And let's take them at their word, and let's see if they can actually make that work in a way. But I don't want to expose the general public to additional nicotine products, other products of that sort in the air that we breathe in the normal no smoking areas. That's why I proposed the bill in the first place, and I urge the committee to pass the basic bill that I've already proposed. But this one wrinkle might be useful for those people who are zealous about helping other people get off of the use of tobacco cigarettes. One other comment, if I may. It is already unlawful to use marijuana in any form in a way that would put something into the air in a public place. Marijuana is more restricted than the use of tobacco, so the last witness before me who was talking about that, I think is incorrect. I'm sorry that Mark Mayer left, because he would be the person who could give you a definitive statement about what the rule about marijuana is, but it is my understanding that it is not legal now to use marijuana in a way that puts it out into the air. And my able staff just handed me a statute that includes the dangerous weapons on the bottom and limitations on immunity at the top for marijuana. I'll just give you the statute number because I can't read it in a minute. It's ORS 475.316. I suggest looking at that and also checking with Mark Mayer about that issue. But it is my understanding, at least, that it would be unlawful for a person to put hashish or some other THC type product in a vape product, even if they are using it for medical reasons, and use it in a public place now. That this bill doesn't have any effect at all on that issue.
Thank you, Representative. Any quick questions? Welcome to the Human Services and Housing Committee. She's brand new to the legislature. This is her third day, so we're so happy to have her.
Could I ask
yes.
you a question? So actually my mind was kind of going in the same direction as yours, and I appreciate you lighting up your e-cigarette, because I actually haven't seen it, and I've heard from a lot of people that they've been next to someone in an airport who's done it, and that it actually really bothered them, and I didn't know what it was about, but I got a very strong whiff too, and so that does raise concerns for me about being in a restaurant or next to someone in a train station or those kind of places. And so I like the direction that it's going, and I wonder if out of the people, all the people who own the vaping stores here, are there, if the earth says that vaping is permitted in a shop that exclusively sells vapor products, does that include everyone here? All of your shops exclusively sell vaping products?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes? Or is there any other exception?
We sell sodas.
So I just wonder.
I'm sorry, you cannot speak from the audience.
Okay, so I just wanted to be clear, because some of you maybe haven't seen the amendment. If you have any suggestions about that language, we are in a very tight timetable. I encourage you to contact Representative Barnhart.
Absolutely. Any last comments? Representative Olson, you've been very patient. Anything?
Nope.
Okay. Anything else? I'm sorry. No, I asked the committee, not you. So I don't usually allow applause, even though we did have some applause earlier on, but usually we don't. But I want you to applaud yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You were very patient. You stayed here a very long time to listen to a lot of testimony about bills about which you had no interest, and you were very patient to stay, and you were very polite here, and we really appreciate it. So I'm going to give you a nice applause.
Yay.
We're going to close the public hearing and the work session on House Bills 4115 and 4075, and we will carry both of these bills over. Again, thank you very much. Thank you, committee.
And we're adjourned.